Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about the premiere episode of what will be another amazing season of this franchise, I'm sure. But let me welcome in, for the first time on this podcast since becoming a new dad, my amazing co-host, Mike Bloom. Mike, mazel tov, firstly, and secondly, welcome back.
Thank you. I am feeling spectacular right now. I'll admit, my new bundle of joy has made me a bit sleep deprived. So, Shannon, I hope you don't mind. You may have to carry me piggyback through this podcast, metaphorically speaking. But I am so, so happy to be here. Let's not bury the lead too much, though, because if people are just tuning in from a South Africa perspective, Shannon, I feel like we have both had major changes in our personal lives since we last talked about Survivor South Africa on a major basis, considering mazel to you. You are engaged.
Yeah, but that happened like 6 months ago and you had a baby last week. Like, this isn't about me.
We're not going with recency bias here. We've both undergone massive life events since the time that Survivor South Africa season 6 passed and season 7 has premiered. I'm not saying there's not a direct correlation between that fantastic season and what has befallen our lives, but you know what? I think it's not coincidental that those events happen to sort of align in a certain way.
Yeah, it was like such a good thing in my life. And then I also got engaged, which was also great. And it was just kind of like the good times kept rolling. I will say, based on like what you said about your sleep deprivation, it seems terrible for you. But honestly, like, I'm kind of enjoying it because the way that the time zones work during the day, you're usually asleep for me. And now when I message you, I know I'll get replies your time, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., doesn't matter. I always like am calculating the time and feeling really sad for you. But like for me, it's super convenient.
Yes, I'm on call for both my 2-week-old child and Shannon Gates.
I know, I'm super needy like that. Like, am I not more needy than the baby?
I know. I mean, listen, there's certain different needs. And you know what? I'd rather, it's all about, as Mike said, being at the bottom of a good, I don't know, on-call pairing. So you know what? I'm happy to speak with you at all hours of the night / morning / afternoon, including at this point where I think you and Liana did such a fun, fantastic job of breaking down the cast, especially given the very limited resources before Mnet actually started coming out with promotional material. But now we can finally sort of bring things to life from the various social media stalkings you're doing. And now we have a season we can finally talk about.
Yeah, I was super happy with how relevant a lot of that was. Firstly, we talked about how Leanne was only following one Twitter account and it was the Spice Girls. And then she was wearing a hashtag wannabe a Spice Girl top. And I was like, I can't believe that we kind of sleuthed that would happen. And then
If you want to be a Spice Girl, don't be the first boot, I think is like the lesson that Leanne should utilize here.
Yeah. Which of the Spice Girls would do worst on Survivor? I guess Scary Spice. She sounds bossy and they don't like bossy women.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mel B would not do particularly well. I feel like Ginger Spice would be she'd either be the early quitter or she'd be like the under the radar, you know, coming to prominence near the end goddess. I think those two are like the polar opposites. And then you have sort of everyone else filling out the in-between.
I don't know. Baby Spice would be a goat. Sporty Spice would be too much of a threat. Okay, you will brand steal the simulation. I'm sure Leanne will be listening. Unfortunately, we don't have more of her, so we just have to go based on her love of the Spice Girls. But yeah, I was very happy with how much of our preseason podcast came into it. The bank robbing father was mentioned. It was like, wow, we really knew these people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, looking back, you could have looked up more of Tanya's story, yeah, considering how climactic she is and how much she's involving those anecdotes in her life. It's also really interesting. I'll definitely bring up, after you guys recorded, as I mentioned before, Mnet released like 45-second individual clips and also like a meet the cast type of videos for each of them. And I certainly garnered some assessments based on what you guys talked about and what I saw there that I will say for the pretty much was subverted, you know, across the board, a couple of really big people particularly. So I'm happy, you know, for all the preseason speculation that we love, it's nice to finally have an episode to talk about, to see exactly how these people are going to do, if they're going to really walk the walk or talk the talk. And it seems like we're sort of a split here between those that are really, you know, off to a good start and some people that have really put themselves in a bit of a hole to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know the cast before you can kind of see them pop on screen. Some people definitely pop more on screen than from the limited bios. So yeah, but I mean, overall, I think like super fun cast. I think Island of Secrets could be a really cool mechanism. Kind of reminds me of the Outpost from New Zealand /, you know, Exile Island / Ghost Island. I like that there's a cross-tribal dynamic to it. So look, I'm really happy that International Survivor is back. I'm kind of not speaking to US Survivor right now, so I needed something else, and Survivor South Africa was absolutely the perfect season for me to turn to.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think we were very, very spoiled with Survivor South Africa season 6. And that's am going to admirably try to not compare the two, because I think it's a very special season. And it's essentially a unicorn of a season. And look, even the premiere is not going to compare to what we saw. And I will also put out a blanket statement here. Apologies to be so tangential to start off the podcast here. But for those of you that are tuning into this podcast for the first time, I will warn you, we are definitely going to be spoiling the events of Survivor South Africa season 6.
Yeah.
And maybe some previous seasons as well. I'm actually right at the finale of season 5, too. I mean, as you talked about during the assessment, this is a Survivor South Africa podcast. It would be a disservice to the franchise if we didn't speak about previous seasons. So putting out a blanket spoiler warning right here, right now, if you don't want to be spoiled, pause this podcast, go watch all of Survivor South Africa
DM
season
me
6.
For that.
Yeah, you will not regret it. But I mean, it's so interesting. Even the premiere of Survivor South Africa season 6 was a great microcosm of what we were going to expect in terms of everyone behaving on the brink of insanity in the decisions that they were making. This premiere was fun. It felt a bit more like a conventional Survivor premiere in that you do have some kooky characters. You do have some more logical thinkers. It's more of a mixed bag than just what the very special cast of season 6 was. So I got to say, even though it might not have been as outrageously fun, I think it was very solid. I think we have a good group and a lot to talk about. So I'm very excited, especially given the events of what happened a day prior to this premiere. I think we're in a good place to start the season off.
Yeah, it's my favorite Survivor episode of the week for sure. It would be, yeah, as you said, a disservice to compare it to season 6, which I love so much at the time, and like even in hindsight, just love it even more. I know we said we wouldn't talk about it, but it just is truly just such a special season of Survivor. And I'm sure this will be good too, because it's got, you know, all the same fans behind it, all the same production, and they really know what they're doing. So I'm excited to get into it. Just a quick note of housekeeping just before we get into everything. We do have Rob Cicinino booked for the podcast next week, if not the week after. So it'll probably be next week. So it's a really good time for everyone to, you know, to be watching. Tell all your friends, watch Survivor South Africa, and, you know, listen to this podcast, hopefully. But we do have really good Survivor to talk about for the next 4 months.
Yeah. And we've got, you know, some guests in the lineup as well. People who have been out there, people who have been on different islands, people who have been watching so intensely. So we have a good 18 weeks ahead of us. It's crazy to think about, but I really do feel like, honestly, Shannon, it's going to fly by if this cast continues to be as frenetic as some of them may have shown in this first episode.
Yeah, for sure. So where do we start with this? We have three tribes who are also, like, it's difficult to pronounce those tribe names, as if it wasn't difficult enough for some of the cast members. I feel like Survivor South Africa is trying to kill me through enunciation.
There's a difference between South African and, you know, Samoan. And I'm trying to, I feel free to fact check me out there here, folks. I feel like these might be, at least compared to the American version, I can't remember any American tribes that had the apostrophe
exactly
in the middle of its name.
Yeah, it's way more difficult,
we have, like,
I think.
The Ta'alo, the yeah. Sa'ula. I mean, it makes me feel more exotic saying it, but, you know, I think me pronouncing French words is probably me feeling more exotic considering how white I am.
Yeah, I mean, in America, it's just kind of like Nuku, Manu, you know, it's just like, I don't know, it's fine. We will probably butcher it. I know I might, but I think it'll be okay. Let's get into the tribe. Let's start off with that. Let's start off with I already screwed it up. There you go. Sa'ula? Yeah, because they're the tribe that went to
Tribeca. Not to be confused with Sa'ala, the season 1 New Zealand fan favorite winner who called a finalist a turd in a toilet bowl.
How could we confuse those things? Because it's Ta'alo and Sa'ula. So Sa'ula, the tribe I feel like we got to know the best because they went to tribal council, and I feel like there was like a lot of character development given to all of them. What did you think of this tribe?
Yeah, this is one of the ones where my pre-season assessment go figure, those of you that listen to the B&B are probably not shocked to hear this at all. I was completely wrong about them preseason. I actually talked with you a bit about this, Shannon. You know, they released the tribe designations a couple days leading up to the premiere. And, you know, I'm looking at this group and I'm like, my God, I mean, it's a pretty jacked cast overall, but they are like the jacked of the jacked. They are the muscles built on top of the muscles. So I'm like, if they're going to go with some physical challenges, a la Australian Survivor Champions versus Contenders, we might not see them in a tribal council going into a swap or even the merge. Suffice it to say, they lose the first immunity challenge, which actually makes me excited because that makes me hopeful that the producers do see the point about how there are a lot of muscular people out there, but that's not going to be the be-all end-all for each challenge. You know, they essentially got undone by this crazy puzzle that I'm sure we're going to talk about. And that makes me happy and that makes me excited that it's not just going to be a steamroll, that even a little weakling underdog tribe like Ta'alo is going to come in first place just by the benefit of puzzles alone. But this is a really interesting group because I still do feel like even though they did lose the first challenge, it still feels like they sort of have this, for lack of a better term, a meathead mentality. I think Sipe said it best when she's like, they very much have the blinders on of keeping physicality around when, as that first challenge showed, that might not be the thing that's most indicative to success this season.
Yeah, I mean, they could easily not lose another challenge, I think. Like, they definitely are, like, a very physically strong tribe. It's just that the puzzle took hours, and it's always the great equalizer. So it's funny when people are, like, rushing to do the puzzle, and then you either have it or you don't, basically. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if they will go to another tribal council. I guess it's, like, who on this tribe is really doing the puzzles? I don't know, like, if they have, like, that, you know, Jacques character or Ting Ting who were kind of doing it for Ta'alo who won the challenge. But it's an interesting dynamic for me because we see it so many times in Survivor for me where it's like the cool kids versus, you know, kind of the misfits who don't fit in. And that immediately happens on this tribe, you know, Nathan, Rob, Steffi and Nicole, immediately the four cool kids. And I love it even more because it's got this like inbuilt storyline, which international survivors want to do. Doesn't often happen on US Survivor. There's a lot more people in America, but we've got this like pageant wars storyline, which I actually found really compelling. You know, you've got Leanne versus Nicole, and they're the same archetype, but where Nicole is like kind of calm and statuesque and put together, you know, Leanne was, she seemed anxious, she was awkward, she was on the out, so it's like she's been resenting Nicole this entire time, lands up on the beach with this person whose face she probably has on dartboard back home, and it was just kind of like, again, lost to her, which was kind of heartbreaking, but also I thought was very compelling.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree in that I am so torn on Leanne. She's another person who I thought was going to do really well.
Well, she was a huge character in the preseason. Like, that is shocking. She was like the first person released.
She was the number one. Yeah. She was the number one Billboard person. I realize now maybe Mnet was doing an advertising visual version of First One Out of Let's Make Us Really Get to Know the First Person Booted. But I mean, between not only the pageantry background, but the fact that like she goes mountain climbing and like does all this athletic stuff. She is very sympathetic. She supports, you know, she talks in the tribal council about how she like works with people on making their dreams come true. And I do feel really bad that sort of unfairly from her perspective, I'm sure the producers were very understandably rubbing their hands in glee when they found out that they had two people, two former Mrs. South Africas.
South Africa, Mike, please.
Yeah, one current, I guess. The time has not expired yet for Leanne's reign. But to put them together on one tribe, you know, it sort of is like the opposite end of the spectrum of what happened with Matt and Dave in Survivor New Zealand season two in terms of the benefits and drawbacks that can come with having someone you know not only on the same tribe season as you, but on the same tribe as you, in that it really, I think, clouded her judgment. I think one of the reasons why she really ended up being ostracized was she makes up this excuse later on. And I do think some of the handling that she did to sort of make up ground once she realized her head was on the chopping block was a bit sloppy. She just sort of say, oh, you know, I had to watch Sipe because you never leave someone alone in the game of Survivor.
Yeah, you do.
If I would be, I mean, if I would be completely honest, not to psychoanalyze her too much, I feel like she said, I want to stay as far away from Nicole as possible. She's associated with a bunch of negative memories I have from my past, which is completely understandable. And I think as a result, she by default was hanging out with Sipe. And as a result, this other group formed without her. So I think it was bad circumstances with the casting on top of her necessarily handling things the right way that led to her ultimately being the first boot here, surprisingly so.
Yeah, it's kind of, it really is heartbreaking because she said she came on Survivor for one of the reasons was like basically, you know, having dealt with losing in this competition. It's like coming back to prove to herself that she can be strong and she loses like to the exact same person, like in the same bad way. And if like Nicole goes on to win, genuinely check that Leanne is okay. Like, I'm not sure she could take that. Like, I honestly, I thought it was, yeah, a very interesting inbuilt story just for episode one. And I really loved at Tribal Council, every time it closed in on Leanne's face, they had Nicole right behind her, like bearing down on her in this very close frame. And that kind of just summed it all up for me. You know, it's sad for her. She said, "I don't know what I did wrong." That's what she said at Tribal Council. And the thing is, okay, yes, there was a lot of issues and she didn't go and talk to them. But at the same time, sometimes it's not your people, and sometimes you don't connect socially and you don't fit in, and it can happen in all walks of life. And it happened for her within the first 3 days here. She wasn't connecting. The amigos, the four of them, came together so quickly. They seemed to have such a good thing going, and she just wasn't a part of that. And unfortunately, Survivor is meant to be a social game, and that's really what it was here.
Let's compare the fact that, you know, last season we started with two tribes of nine, this time three tribes of seven. I know that Rob has spoken in the past about how he likes starting with bigger tribes because that leads to more flip-flopping back and forth. The advantage of having smaller tribes is, to your point, you can have really tight-knit groups form early on. Now, I guess we're being a bit results-oriented, but I mean, do you feel like the fact that they started with seven people, how much of an effect do you think that ultimately had on what happened to Leanne?
Well, I guess if she had a bigger tribe, she might have had, you know, more places to hide. Seven's really interesting because if you do find that core group of four, where are the other three going to go? Like, who are they going to flip from that four? So if you're on the outs in the first day or so and there's a couple of you left out, I mean, you're kind of then screwed and there's really no options for you.
Yeah, I agree. And so, well, I think from an airtime perspective, the three smaller tribes are better. I feel like from a gameplay perspective, you have the shackles on almost to begin with. And so again, that's another unfortunate circumstance that I feel like fell into Leanne's lap here. It's just, it's a really bad set of timing. I do agree that, like, I think if she had been on any other tribe, especially considering the other people that were ostracizing themselves on those tribes, I think she could have done totally well, maybe even made it to the end game and defeated her rival, Nicole. The thing that's so interesting to me about Nicole as well is that, like you said, you have Leanne sort of hungry for the win. She just came off of a major win, but this is a representation of the fact that she has lost so badly before. Nicole, she surprised me a bit as well, because I'll admit, in the preseason, she came across to me a bit aloof. In her Mnet video, she's like, "The money doesn't matter to me. I just care about being brave." And I'm like, oh, okay, let's write her off. She's not going to be playing the game anytime soon. But it seems like maybe from an editing perspective, because she was so intrinsically tied into Leanne, she had more airtime, but it does feel like she was probably had the most screen time of everyone. Maybe her and Tanya were probably the two biggest screen hogs this entire episode.
No, it's not aloofness. What it was modesty from someone who is like perfect in every way. Like, I know that because I have a best friend who is perfect and she's always so humble. And I feel like that's the vibe I was getting from Nicole, where it's like she's used to winning at everything. She won Miss South Africa, as Leanne can tell you. She just nails life, basically. So when she comes into something, it's kind of way too braggy to be like, "I want to win" and stuff, because it's like she's a winner. So she comes in being like, "I don't care if I win," because she knows that she will win, because she seems to be just like a winner at life.
Yeah, let's talk about this Amigos Alliance for a second. I mean, they were able to make it through one vote seemingly together, even though it seems like they did not let Paul in on the last minute vote swap. I mean, do we feel like the fact that they were so volatile at Tribal Council in terms of really going back and forth between the two, does that portend well to them? Do we think that they're going to stick together still, pick off CPay next if they go to Tribal Council? Or do you think fractures have already started to form considering how much they disagreed on that first boot?
I think the four are completely locked in. I do have an idea that maybe CPay can use to get through the next episode. I don't know if Paul is so much in it, and I do want to talk about that. But in terms of the four, I didn't really see them as arguing about it. I kind of saw it as them being like, "Look, let's just vote how we want, because basically both of your lives in the game, CPay and Leanne, are totally meaningless to us. Like, whichever one of you comes back to camp, it's kind of irrelevant to me. Just vote how you want and we'll go home." Like, I thought it was pretty bad because one of these people is going to come back to camp with you. You may swap away from them. You may not lose a challenge. Who knows what will happen? And then they know that basically they were worthless in the game to you, where you didn't care who was voting for who, and it was kind of 50-50 who would go home. So I kind of saw it as more of an ambivalence towards both Leanne and Sipe and not like really infighting. I mean, obviously there's power dynamics there. I think Nathan really has a connection with Sipe that he's trying to use. I think Nicole benefits from not having Leanne in the game because I think Leanne has resented her for several years, and it's not good to have someone in the game off the bat who feels that way towards you. But I didn't see it as a problem that they had with each other.
It's like an anti-Sophie's choice. They're like, I don't care about either kid.
Exactly.
Like it doesn't matter to me. That's why I can't make the choice. The Nicole point is interesting because at first glance, I thought, Nicole, you know, Leanne comes to you saying, hey, I want to work with you. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't. Keep her around. It's almost like, reminds me of when Chris Underwood got rid of Keith.
Please don't back say in, the like, name the Chris Underwood to me, right?
I know, it triggered. when he got rid of Keith back in the second episode, even though Keith sort of promised loyalty to him, and bing, bang, boom, he gets rid of the very next episode because he got rid of someone who was, you know, firmly in his corner. But the thing was, I think Nicole had a good assessment of, like, honestly looking at Leanne as a bit untrustworthy from her perspective. At least I could totally see Leanne selling her a bill of goods and saying, no, I'm going to get my revenge later. So I think it was smart of Nicole, and from a Nicole perspective, to get rid of Leanne. I think, like you said, maybe there's a Nathan Sipe connection that we're not exactly sure about. I'm not entirely sure why Rob and I guess Steffi by proxy. Well, Steffi seemed like she was anti-Leanne as well. Yeah. Rob was really the one that was really like the anti-Sipe trainer. I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were saying that she was a threat. I mean, Steffi seems to dislike both of them. She's a very interesting character to me. She's like pretty stoic. She tells it like it is. That's for damn sure. That's a very interesting female archetype for me. I think they didn't really care. But for Nicole to have, she's the one who I think had the greatest stake in it, because for her to have someone there who's promising her loyalty, like, how could you buy that? You know, Nicole seemed to know, which is odd to me, that she might be bitter about it. It's like, a lot of people lost to Nicole that year. Obviously, you know, Leanne didn't even make the top 25, but Nicole was right in that she would be bitter. So how well would that have gone for Nicole to keep someone who's been resenting her in actual personal life for years? I think she gains a lot from this. I think Nathan seems to really have something with Sipe, something worth putting himself on the line. He couldn't be having those communal conversations out in the jungle because of his injury. You know, as you said, Rob was carrying him around everywhere, which I thought was an absolute mood. But I think he's obviously got a stake in it. And I don't think Rob maybe had as much of a stake in Leanne or Steffi, Leanne or Sipe. I think Steffi seemed to dislike them both. So it's just that they cared more, so they won out.
Yeah, let's talk about that Nathan injury for a second, because it's been a while since I think we've had, you know, someone get, I mean, maybe not so much. It reminds me actually of like the Jenna stuff from Australian Survivor, considering how much, I think she got injured in like that first immunity challenge too, right? But it's so interesting that especially with such a smaller tribe where like every person counts, that there is not even a quibble of conversation about not keeping this guy around, to the point where they say, hey, take our tribe idol and put it around your neck so that you know that you are not going home. It's pretty ridiculous. Maybe they knew that his ankle is going to heal fast. I believe like maybe it was Leanne said at tribal council that like his ankle apparently should be okay in a couple days. Maybe that's not why he got pulled, but I don't know. I feel like I kept thinking back to, you know, all these other seasons where, you know, your Jeff Wilsons or your Chets, who like people get injured and then they immediately get voted out because they end up being a liability for the tribe. So it's a bit surprising that, again, those amigos are so, so tight that even when one of their members, the day after the alliance forms, gets injured, they're not going to bat an eyelash at getting rid of him.
Well, I mean, he's only been injured for a few hours. I mean, let's see how the next couple of challenges go. You could always vote him out if, obviously, you lose the challenge because of it next. But I do think that it would be kind of stupid for those four. I don't really see Paul as being part of the four. So to, you know, risk a 3-3 by taking out one of your own, no matter what, they say they're all about strength, but strategically, that would make no sense. And obviously, like, all the kudos to him for having such social capital that not only is he so well insulated, he'll never be voted out, but I think he really got his way. And I do think that the votes kind of did change there at Tribal Council. It seems like they were going in there for Sipe. And once he kind of had the floor and could talk about something while sitting down at Tribal Council, you know, he got what he wanted out of that.
Yeah, such an interesting first Tribal Council. It's the first one I can remember in a while where, I mean, actually, again, I keep going back to Australian Survivor, but that was another one where I feel like the votes sort of switched in the moment. It was a live tribal, so to say, where you have these four whispering in the back. And I do feel bad that Paul got left out. I wonder if it's just because he happened to sit next or sit in front of Rob. I feel like, honestly, if him and Cipe had switched positions and he was sitting in front of Nathan, it would have been a unanimous vote. But because I guess Rob was so, again, anti-Cipe, he just did not let Paul in on exactly what the change plan was. But it was really interesting how it was. And again, maybe this is a difference between international and U.S. I feel like U.S., even though there's seven of them, and they'd be in all corners of tribal council whispering to each other. Here, they're very polite. They stay seated, but they're just whispering sort of down the row at each other in front of these poor people that are on the firing line.
See, I don't really see Paul as part of that four. Like, you know, he was obviously not there when they formed it. He's not in the right demographic to fit with all of them. You know, he's wearing his cap sideways like he's one of the cool kids. And it's
oh,
like,
my God.
Really not working.
I love white rapper Paul look. Like, he is looking like, I don't know, like the Jamie Kennedy little Bow Wow clone that I never thought I needed in this world. And he looks so goddamn ridiculous, especially the fact that is he the oldest person this season, or at least the oldest man? That it's very much the Steve Buscemi meme from 30 Rock of how do you do, fellow kids?
That was sent to me by DJ LaBelle Klein today in relation to Paul, that exact meme. Yeah, it's not, I don't see him as being part of the four. And that brings me to what Cipe can do next. Because as I said in the preseason podcast, she is one bossy comment during the shelter making portion of the game away from going home. And she honestly almost was, which is sad because I really, really love Cipe. And we got a question from Kristen Lynott Cole, who asked, you know, what's her best move to get out of the bottom? And I think that it's actually a good move for the four. And so she should go and tell them this, because I think it would be in their best interest that she should go to them, lean on her connection with Nathan, which she seems to have, obviously offer him her loyalty, and point out that if she goes home and they lose again, Paul would obviously be, you know, he's definitely on the bottom of that five, and then he can idle out whoever he wants. So if they just split the vote on her, you know, either they flush his idol, she goes home, or let's, you know, even better, let's blindside him with his idol. Then if you lose again, you can take out Cipe and your four are well done there. So I think that that's what her next move needs to be. Or I guess just hope that Nathan's ankle injury, her number one ally, just hope that that would be enough. But I think the best move for her is definitely to throw Paul under the bus. I mean, we'll talk about it when we talk about Island of Secrets, but having an idol everyone knows about right at the beginning of the game, I'd be taking that person out.
Now, I want to put a pin in that idol stuff, but yeah, yeah. I think that on paper, I would say throwing Paul would be good. You could also say, again, it seems like the four are super tight, but you could theoretically try to paint this idea in Nathan's head where, yes, it was pretty amicable what they decided, but you could say like, hey, notice that Paul voted against me. I think if you did vote me out and it came down to the five, I think it's clear that Paul would side with Rob, maybe over you. What are you going to do about that? Again, I don't know how amenable Nathan would be to that. I think it also depends on the fact that this is a good pitch on paper. It seems like Cipe has a problem with approach. We even see it during the planning the vote stage, the post-immunity challenge thing, where it seemed like she was pretty much safe, but there was some doubt thrown in when she goes to them and makes the pitch, and she is just, from their perspective, very aggressive and matter of fact. That we see this so many times on reality TV. It's not your content, it's your intent. You know, it's the way that you deliver things that really is going to leave an impression on whether or not someone is going to work with you. And one of the other reasons why I feel like Cipe was up on the chopping block is not only because of those bossy comments, but it just seems like the way she approaches discourse is in a very entrepreneurial way. And it makes sense from someone who, you know, is a mother to two teenagers and is used to owning her own business for a number of years. She's used to sort of making decisions in the moment, clipped, blunt, and able to get it done. That might not play well when people are trying to sort of have a conversation about things. So I think if she's able to sort of curtail that and gussy up or wise up to Nathan a bit more, maybe be a bit more languid, legato with her approach rather than staccato, I think she could have a good in. Right now, it's a little tough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it, like, for me, in terms of her, I don't know if it was content or intent. I feel like it was just position in the game. I mean, look at what Steffi is allowed to do by being in a position of total power. Like, she can dismiss people and be, like, completely aggressive with her approach in terms of the way she's talking to people. And I just feel like with Cipe, from the get-go, she's chosen as the weak link. I mean, she does really, really well in that challenge, which we'll talk about. But she was just really ostracized from the get-go. Again, a demographic perspective as well there. So I just feel like, you know, she was left out. I liked her pitch, you know. It's hard. She's fighting for her life. She's going to try and be really passionate about that. And they see her, then they saw her as bossy, but then they saw her as a threat. And I was like, maybe you just don't like her. You know, like, it's so hard at that point when you're just on the outs. And I think this pitch is perfect. I think, as I said, it would be a really good move for them to do. So if she can do it, I think they should go for it. And I think that it's all going to come down to you know, her connections, and primarily the connection she seems to have with Nathan. We didn't see a lot of it, but it's obviously, you know, bigger than what we even saw, in that he was trying really, really hard to protect her.
Yeah, he sort of gave this logic during confessional of, like, she has more in her, you know, than I think Leanne does, which I think Nathan is too strategic to really keep someone around just for, like, yeah, the merit of it all. I think that's clear that they did have some sort of, he saw a potential in her, and hopefully he's able to utilize that. Let's talk about this idol decision, because, you know, I feel like there, we can separate what happened on the Island of Secrets versus the aftermath of it. So Paul gets chosen as this leader, but he, even preseason, he has this mentality of, I'm going to be on the outside because I'm the oldest person here. So he decides, like, I'm going to come clean and just make it a tribe idol, which seems like next week there might be some repercussions behind it. But how do you feel about the way that he approached, you know, this idea of the group idol with the entire tribe?
Well, not to spoil so much of my Island of Secrets thoughts, which we'll get into, but I believe fire was the correct move. I mean, obviously, so he takes the clue. He leaves it out so that Rocco can see it. It was like, oh my God, terrible, terrible moment number one. And then to have a tribe idol, like, what is that? You know, it was like really a tribe idol. They found it in front of Leanne. I would rather not have an idol than have an idol that everyone knows about. As I said, I think that she should pitch, you know, CPay should pitch that Paul should go next. So this early in the game, especially, like, I would rather not even have an idol than to have that target on your back. Like, he seems pretty genuine. I feel like he will use it for the tribe, but just the thought that he might not, you don't know this guy. Like, just in case he doesn't, you should probably take him out. And I feel like if you're going to do something for the tribe, then get them fire. Like, the tribe idol never works out.
Well, I wonder if, you know, the way he wanted to spin it was a way to endear himself to them. You know, he said, they're going to maybe, you know, what do we always say about these dilemma things, about how, you know, it's sometimes if people are going to suspect that you have the clue anyway. Sometimes it's good to just take the clue, because then you'll at least still have a clue in your pocket, as opposed to being suspected and not having a clue at all. So maybe he thought he could sort of have the best of both worlds and be like, I'm going to show who I am, which is authentic. You know, I'm going to say, just so you know, I had this clue. I'm going to reveal it to you all, though, so we can all use it together. Maybe he feels like the idol is going to be neutralized as effect of, you know, if everyone knows who has the idol, then it really loses its power, in a manner of speaking. I'm of two minds about it, because I think that he did a good job. I mean, I honestly feel like he might have gotten brought in as the fifth wheel in this Amigos alliance because of that. I feel like maybe they, if they got a good first impression of him, they're like, okay, great, so we know that he's trustworthy from this perspective. At the same time, like you said, if a clear core has formed, you want something in your pocket that can guarantee you survive another couple of days. And I feel like if he used the idol and survived, there still would be people against him for a number of reasons. One of them saying, hey, remember when you told us how good and honest you were, that you wouldn't use the idol against us? Well, you just broke your word.
Yeah, I mean, being the fifth in what is now a tribe of six isn't a great position anyway. I just feel like, yeah, it's way too threatening. I would be wanting to endear myself more to everyone. And yeah, I mean, then he, as I said, the fact that Rocco was able to see the clue, there was just like a carelessness to everything. They find the idol and then give it back to him, which I think, like, for Nicole, probably for the best, as I said, for everyone to know, it's just like a target on your back at this point.
So they said, I think Rob said, like, oh, too bad Leanne was around when we found the idol, because otherwise it could have been between us. Did he mean that, like, they would have found the idol and just told Leanne and CPay, oh, we don't know where it is, I guess we have to keep looking, and just sort of keep it between them to be a bit more duplicitous against Paul's original intent?
I think he thought that they were going to keep it. I think he even said between the five of them without Leanne, and I don't know if CPay knows about it. I don't feel like it was necessary. And to your point about, you know, when you bring back a reward, something like rice, for example, people are always like, oh, they clearly took the smaller bag of rice and got a clue with it, you know. But I feel like Flint is not like a weighted object. It's something that, like, you either have fire or you don't. And I feel like once you're coming back with Flint, people seem to really hope or expect that those leaders were going to come back with Flint. And I feel like for Rocco, at least, they seem to really believe, and he could be totally transparent with them, that, you know, that he got Flint. So I feel like that's significant enough of a prize, as opposed to, like, vegetables, which we've seen, or whatever other useless prize that people can kind of downplay in their minds, that if he'd come back with fire, they would have, you know, really taken that honesty from him.
Especially because in that first reward challenge, they seem to be bringing in the biggest haul, in part because CPay had such a loud, demanding voice. So maybe they weren't exactly hurting for too much. And maybe, you know, I forget, was it Paul or was it Cobus? I forgot who gave the logic of like, well, I figured you'd already have fire already, so that's why I didn't bring back the flint.
Yeah, I feel like that, I guess, yeah, must have been Paul, because otherwise, Kukuba's, we will talk about it, but I mean, we can go on to his tribe, but he told them that nothing had happened at Island of Secrets, which is the kind of plan where next episode, when someone gets sent to the Island of Secrets and there's some sort of dilemma, they're like, that sounded really suspect, and now we know it's definitely not true.
Well, maybe he said that, like, oh, you know, maybe there was something presented to the other two and they shut me out or something
but
like
he
that.
Said there but was, I, he said there was nothing. Like, he said we just, like, literally chilled there. And I was like, you definitely need a better life than that if you're going to, you know, choose to take the clue.
You need to write the poem that came with the parchment that said you had to choose between, I don't know, a chicken or a bag of rice, and you drop the rice in the ocean on the way back to your island. Like, we need a narrative here so that people can actually believe you.
You need to take fire, which, you know, you need to take fire because no one's come up with a good lie yet. I mean, either you're going to have to, as I've said, tell a majority of people that you have, like, a clue, which you wouldn't want to do in this situation because you haven't even met them yet. Or you have to, I guess, be really honest and transparent with them and just hope for the best. I really feel like, yeah, for him to come back here, it wasn't a great lie. It's the kind of thing where now Rocco has told his whole tribe that they took a clue. It takes another cross-tribal, you know, conversation at Island of Secrets, which is obviously something they're doing next, you know. So just next episode, there could be a couple of people hanging there and they'll tell the person, whoever it is on Rocco's tribe, will tell them that they took the clue and he'll be completely found out immediately. So that's a target on your back. For me, I mean, it might be conservative gameplay, but I feel like you can't win the game on day one, but you can lose it on day one. And having an idol everyone knows about, or being really shady and lying about something and getting caught out in a couple of days, is a way to lose the game.
Well, it's interesting as well, because I don't know if you noticed this, but the first challenge, the first immunity challenge, usually gives away flint to, especially in a three tribe season, like, oh, first place tribe gets flint. They didn't get any rewards in this immunity challenge. So if I'm a super fan, if I'm like a Jacques, for example, I'm running through my head being like, okay, if we didn't get flint here, maybe there was an option to get flint somewhere else, like at the Island of Secrets. Could Kobus, you know, be hiding something, a choice that he had to make, which turns out to be completely accurate.
Yeah, and I mean, they did end up getting flint when they went to tribal council, but yeah, I would definitely think beyond that, even without getting anything at the immunity challenge, he literally said that nothing had happened. Like, no one would believe that. Well, they just sent them to the Island of Secrets just to kind of hang out. There's no clue, there's no game mechanism. Like, that's just not anything that Survivor would do.
And we played 7-Up, we played Never Have I Ever, you know. We were a real rowdy gang, me, Rocco, and Paul.
Yeah, and they just sent us there, and they just, you know, didn't want to put any impetus into the game at all. Like, that's totally what a strategic game would do. Yeah, you need to come up with a better lie, which to this point in Survivor, I don't believe anyone has done, which is why I warn against it, so I can't blame him too much. But to talk about the rest of his tribe before we get even more into the Island of Secrets, Ta'alo, it's hard to talk about this tribe without making it really all about Tanya, which is what most of my notes about.
It's Tanya Alo, essentially, at this point.
Oh, I love Tanya Alo. Yeah, you know, back in the day, the first podcast I ever did in my entire life, I was the Debbie expert on Survivor Game Changers in the preseason. So I feel like I'm, like, perfectly placed to talk about the Tanya character, who is basically the South African Debbie. I mean, I feel like that's what people are thinking online.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, I think she sort of combines the broad resume and braggadocious nature of Debbie with the anecdotal nature of Coach, which is sort of like a bit reciprocal, because Debbie was also called the female Coach, so she's sort of like double Coach with a hint of Debbie in there. But I love Tanya so much. She's just so much fun, because not only is she a character, but she has really dug both her hands, her arms, her face into this game, essentially, and trying to make, again, the it's interesting comparing, you know, the four person alliance that forms super quick on Ta'ula with Ta'alo, where Tanya has essentially made her own four person alliance four times over the course of 3 days. It's insane. I think she is massively failing at it, which almost makes it funnier, but she's just so much fun to watch. Maybe this is her sort of suffering from her marijuana withdrawal that just causes her energy level to spike insurmountably and make her go crazy.
Yeah, but as we correctly researched in the preseason podcast, yes, marijuana is now legal. So that actually did turn out to be really important information to you, the listeners. Like, you're all very welcome. Yeah, Tanya at this point has made an alliance with every person on the tribe except Felix, who also really doesn't seem to like her, so it's okay. I guess kind of just assuming that no one will talk to each other and they'll all only talk to her. I have in my notes, let's break it out. What she did, as I said, the South African Debbie Wanner. I have it. Okay, so she... Yeah, so she firstly insists they find water before even introducing themselves. I feel like this was, it seemed normal at the beginning. But then when you're watching in hindsight, the craziness is really seeping out. Then she insults all the young married people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I will say, like, Tanya, cover your ears for a few minutes, because I am someone who is not only married, but just had a baby all under the age of 30. So I feel like I'm a sinner in Tanya's eyes. And
you ratted me out that I'm engaged and I'm only 26. So.
Oh, I'm dragging you down with me to this 10th circle of hell that we exist in, Tanya's inferno. But I think the other interesting thing about it is, you know, they brought up later that Tanya sort of has this Elizabeth Olsen-esque complex where she can start things but not finish them. And we see it here where they're like, let's get to know each other. Okay, great. Now I'm going to go to the water well. So I think she, again, is just sort of having her mind jump around in so many places that she is just making such an interesting first impression, and she's going to make a very interesting second impression and third impression as well moving forward.
Yeah, I have that here as well as I go into the second page of my notes about what Tanya is doing wrong. She's also working alone and alienating herself, and a secret scene also showed that she's like, people are really suspicious of what she's doing with the idol because she's working alone so much. And then she comes back and she's joking about having found the idol, and she has like a bag of nails and she's like, I have the idol. And people are very uncomfortable with that. You know, it's way too soon to be joking. So I feel like reading the room is not a skill that Tanya has found in her like many occupations. No one believes her stories. As a wise man once said to Coach, actually, he said, don't tell your stories at Tribal. No one believes your stories. Well, that's basically what we've come to here. The bank robbing father, which I did think was a very random thing to be in her bio. And now I see it's like the first thing that she said, a conversation starter. It is the first thing she will tell people about herself. And like, is it something to be proud of? Like, I don't know why this is like her go-to calling card.
Well, I guess the reason why maybe she's having a tough time sort of getting on with everybody is because I guess if we're used to just consorting with rocks every day as a rock climber, maybe rocks and people sort of have different rocks. Approaches. Yeah, they have different approaches to your stories. But the interesting thing about it is, like you said, we've heard this story before, but correct me if I'm wrong here, Shaden, I'm questioning sort of the minutiae of her story, in that she said her father, they wanted to put up a statue of him in 1976 because he, like, burned all the checks that would have made people pay taxes on their cars. Did I get that part of the story right?
Yeah. Okay. So I tried really hard to verify this. I was feeling really amped up about how much people liked my detective skills last week. So I'm like Googling all the stuff. I could not find anything. So I have to believe it's untrue because I know that I would have found it if it existed. I'm that good. Yeah. This is such an odd story to me. They wanted to make a statue of him. Who would have made the statue? The townspeople? Why? What's happening?
Yeah, I don't know if a local government would have really passed the sword deal of like, yes, we'll put up the statue of the renowned criminal who was able to get, you know, deprive us, the government, of all this tax money. Ironically enough, we can't use your tax dollars to do it, so I don't know where we're going to get the funds.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like they had bigger fish to fry than making a statue, and I feel like those fish were her dad, who was robbing banks and burning checks.
Maybe they could have used the burned cinders of the checks to like make some sort of paper mache statue it might have been like 2 foot high, but they could have put it as a nice little prominent statue on like the minister's desk or something.
Yeah, I feel like this is why I couldn't find it in Google. Like, I was Googling statue 1976. I'm going to add in the word paper mache and see what else I come up with about Tanya's dad. Let's get to the strategy itself. So firstly, She tries to make an all-girls alliance in a rare tribe that is not even by gender, not in her favor as well. When that's pointed out, it doesn't matter. But no sooner has she made the alliance than she's cut Meryl out of the alliance. Like, she didn't need to be in it to begin with. And then she's, like, completely just discarded. And then she brings in a couple of other people. You know, she brings in Kuba. She brings in Dante. I feel like they're definitely not on board. Kuba's at the time, I don't think, was even there. Then she's also going to go to Jacques because she needs, like, you know, three plans. The problem is, if you have three plans, but none of them are good, and no one else likes them, you have zero plans, unfortunately.
Three wrongs don't make a right in this case. I do love that, you know, So obviously the woman thing is interesting. She says she wants to bring them together to advance womankind, and then probably exactly advancing womankind by being like, yes, I want all women to work together except that one. I really don't like her, so therefore we should shun her.
One of the two women in my tribe has not made the cut, unfortunately.
Yes, 50% of the other women in my tribe I am getting rid of here. All the power in the world to Ting Ting, who I was a little worried about to be too much of a fish out of water, especially in this big muscly season, but I feel like she's doing a great job of just sort of yes manning or yes womaning Tanya, of being like, sure, I'll go along here because I don't want to get rejected like poor Meryl. I don't know where Tanya got this other four person alliance. I mean, I guess she's going with the one guy who's not there and one guy who's not all there in the form of Dante. When she's talking to Copus later on, Copus is like, how's Dante's bite? And she takes a good pregnant pause and then says, strong. As in, like, I guess a weak-willed, but it's so crazy. You know, other random thing that I love about Tanya's confessionals, I'm sure this is coincidental because of the fact that there was so much rain going on. There was probably a lot of, you know, mist rising. But it seemed like during these scenes, there's a nice smoky filter on Tanya's confessionals. And I don't know if that was just due to the weather or the fact that Tanya may have hotboxed Samoa already and has just already been imbibing in all these crazy ideas.
Yeah, and Mike, you should know that you don't need weed. The only supplement people need is Biostrath. So, you know, that's what she should be heading to. Unfortunately for this tribe, it's really hard to get a sense of any of the strategy because, you know, understandably, all of the information we got revolved around her and all of her strategy was completely a farce. So, yeah, we don't know anything. In my mind, what I really, really want and would love is for Jacques and Ting Ting to team up. They were great on the puzzle together. And I kind of feel like them teaming up would be like me and you teaming up. I feel like Jacques is like the South African you, as you said, this like young, married, nerdy guy. And Ting Ting is South African me. She also has glasses. So I would like those two people to team up.
And those are totally like similar strength of connections between those comparisons. I am flattered that you would compare me to Jacques, because I definitely want to talk about the decision he made during the reward challenge. Before we move on from Tanya, though, can we just take a second? Can we do like a ding, marry, kill or a power ranking of Tanya's proposed three foursomes here? So to sort of throw everything back out there again, first proposed foursome is, as she says, the two guys and two girls, which is Tanya, Cobus, Dante and Ting Ting. The second one is three girls, one guy. Tanya, Ting Ting, Meryl, and Cobus. And the third one is three guys, one girl. Tanya, Cobus, Dante, and Jacques. As she says, the one big common denominator is, of course, 5'2" Tanya. So I guess, Shannon, if we're looking at these three, I don't know if any of these are viable, but I guess if we are ranking them in terms of possibilities, which do you think is the strongest and which the weakest?
I don't know. I don't feel great about it, honestly, because I can't see even one of those people that wants that to work. Like, if even one of those alliances had just one person who was on board, I would choose that alliance as the best one. But, like, every single person we've heard talk about it has been extremely negative. I don't know. I mean, I guess the two guys, two girls, because everything with Meryl, like, she's already cut Meryl, so let's not go with that. The Jacques thing, I haven't even seen them have an interaction. But at the same time, that might be better, like, better to have not had an interaction. So maybe that one's the best? I don't know.
I would love that. Like, all right, Jacques, we're obviously voting together. He's like, we haven't had a conversation about this. What are you talking about?
Wait, actually, Jacques was actually hilarious in confessional. We might not have seen them interact very much, but he was hilarious talking about how if the next immunity challenge is, you know, making up stories, they would win. So he seemed to really not be into that at all. And Felix, the one person she didn't choose, also just really didn't like her. I'm struggling to find, I guess the only person who hasn't said anything super negative about it. No, Meryl did as well. Dante.
Yeah, Cobus did too when she said, oh, I'm controlling Cobus. Cut to Cobus saying like, yeah, she can think that, but that's really not the case. Dante, God only knows, his head is up in the trees. So I guess by default, he is going to be her number one ally because he's the most agreeable aside from Ting Ting.
Yeah, I guess. Perhaps we didn't, like, I think he didn't seem very keen when she was actually talking to him, but I don't know if he had a confessional actually bitching about it. So, like, in that power ranking, I feel like he is the best bet for her, just because they didn't air the inevitable confessional that he did give, which was talking about how much he didn't want to work with her.
Yeah, I would say that first two guys, two girls is probably the best as well, because if they are going to make things as gendered as Tanya wants them to be, I think having more than one guy in the alliance will be able to have a bit of a bigger pull. I think Kobis could not necessarily bear the weight of all three women to be like, yes, we must keep all three of them around. But I feel like having Kobis and Dante, having more voices in that room, if she does indeed suspect that there's a four-way guys alliance going on, even though, again, Kobis was nowhere to be seen to form said guys alliance. But whatever. I really hope that, you know, Ta'alo, they really made a big deal about the fact that this was the tribe that was frowned upon by everyone else in these first few minutes. To have them come and win first place in the puzzle is fantastic. I really hope this becomes the tribe that that becomes, you know, your Tandang, your Kamas that just win all the way to the merge, because this is a great group of people. But specifically, I need Tanya in this game as long as possible. And I don't know if they go to Tribal Council even next episode, how long she is for this world.
I mean, yeah, she's at the bottom of those power rankings by like such a far margin that
they're all at the top of the mountain and she is still at base camp, just sort of trying to get her harness on.
Yeah, like now that we're talking about it, like, you know, I know she likes to get high, but she's extremely low in these power rankings. And like thinking about the fact that within this episode with three tribes, Island of Secrets, two challenges, a lot going on, they still found time to show every other person in the tribe reacting very negatively towards her. So, yeah, that's a storyline.
Can we, not to talk too much about myself or my analog, but should we talk about Jacques as well and the advantage that he was able to muster up during that blindfold challenge?
Yeah, I mean, look, I love Jacques, not just because he's your counterpart, but I thought this was super cool. He's a super fan, so I love that he, like, you know, carried that out and found the advantage in the first challenge through really strategic means. It was really good power of observation to be like, that thing at the end, there's only one of it. I just love the idea that he had Ting Ting and Felix carry it to him unknowingly while blindfolded. And, you know, he threw away the bag, so it wasn't even, like, in a bag of something else that was relevant. They literally, like, risked life and limb, you know, in these blindfold challenges where every obstacle is at crotch level to get him this advantage. And it's of absolutely no power to them, and they have seemed to have no idea that it happened, and I just love the deviance of that.
Now, if he was a true super fan, though, Shannon, he would have eaten the bag after he found the advantage in it.
Yeah, we did get a question about who would be most likely to eat a clue, and I feel like he could have read it. He threw away the bag, but, like, what about the rest of the evidence? He should have just been standing there while everyone was blindfolded, just, like, munching away on this clue.
And I think he really benefited from the fact that I can't remember which tribe ended up losing all the rice when the bag fell
open.
Yeah,
it was Lamai.
Yeah, so maybe he would have been like, oh, I guess there were bags everywhere. Because, yeah, you know, otherwise it looks pretty suspect that here's a random empty bag that ended up sort of strewn aside on the course. But I think this was an awesome sort of course of 5 minutes where, you know, they do this modified Kagayan opening where they pick a leader. The leader picks the weakest person. No one decides to pull a David Samson and purposely pick the strongest person so that they would get some sort of advantage. But they're put in this hero position where they have to lead their tribes. And I think Jacques was able to really take advantage of that, and the supposed quote-unquote weakest person on Ta'alo now has an advantage in his pocket. Granted, it's one that's going to be used, like, God only knows, like 9-10 weeks down the line at the merge, but it's something he could use to barter with as well. It looks like people are going to be bartering information with him next week. So I think for being called out as the weakest member of his tribe on day one, I think he is in a supremely good position on his tribe.
Yeah, I mean, an extra vote at the merge, it's so far away from now. It's not super powerful. It was very, very helpful, this exact advantage when Lisa Stanger had it on Survivor New Zealand. But it's not overpowered, which I do like, because they did introduce three idol clues as well on the Island of Secrets. Plus, they have an Island of Secrets, which obviously probably will have some clues as well the whole time. So there's going to be mechanisms in this game, which, again, is triggering me at the moment. So I like that it's not that overpowered. And, you know, the fact that he got it in this way, I just find, you know, very, very fun. That Survivor South Africa really likes to embolden not the weakest player, but I guess the people who might be on the bottom, you know, someone who is chosen as the weakest on their tribe, who has a chance to gain that advantage. We saw them do it with PK last season when he wasn't chosen for the challenge. And so obviously he was the one who would have needed it, and he found a clue under the, you know, in his reward. So that's the kind of thing they like to do. I'm hopeful that it's something they'll kind of use for the Island of Secrets as well. And I really, really like the way that it played out here.
Yeah, because I think it also subverts expectations. It really keeps people on their toes and thinking like, okay, the decision that I make with my gut, maybe I should rethink it before I do it, because there's a chance that person might get an advantage, or might, you know, do I put myself in that position so that I can sort of guarantee myself a chance that I'm taking a big risk there and not participating in this challenge? It's a really cool essence of risk and reward. And we see it here as well, where they put this advantage in a lone bag on the very end of the course. So, I mean, if people really knew what was going on, and there was a second where, you know, you had Felix and Ting Ting just sort of stumbling into the other people in their tribe and saying, like, what the hell is Jacques doing while he's untying the bag? But he had to take a big risk in saying, I'm going to sacrifice having fewer elements that my tribe gets to take home in lieu of giving myself an individual advantage. And I think he got off pretty well. And he could say at the end of the day, hey, I was voted the weakest member of the tribe. Blindfold challenges aren't my thing. And I've just met you. It was so interesting to me, by the way, of that first challenge that, like, I guess they had to, before Tanya went to go get some more water, I guess they had to quickly introduce themselves because they weren't using, like, red shirt, move forward. You know, they had to really know each other's names to guide each other in that challenge.
Yeah, I'm not usually a massive fan of blindfold challenges just because they're massive injury risks. I've seen a lot of good players almost go home based on, you know, some of the legends like Spencer Bledsoe, Kelly Remington.
We know you love Kelly Remington, yeah. Exactly. Like the goddess Kelly Remington of Survivor Worlds Apart fame almost broke her head open. Luckily, no injuries here despite using that little gurney, even though R.I.P. Felix's nards. It seems like he walked into that post several times with poor Ting Ting.
Yeah, it's like Jacques really only cared about getting the advantage and not, like, actually helping Felix not truly injure himself. Like, yeah. So I don't usually love the blindfold challenge, but if I'm ever going to like it, I really enjoyed it here because it's just so much trust and communication skills for people you haven't even met. Like, that is very interesting to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a cool sort of like getting to know you thing. I always like when they start off with challenges, especially with completely new tribes, because like you said, it really is trial by fire. And this is also interesting where, like, again, Australian Survivor this past season, it wasn't a one tribe takes home all. It was like a hey, grab. It's basically a combination of a marooning and a challenge, which I think is a really cool idea that I wish U.S. Survivor used more, especially considering that we sort of have been doing the same marooning over and over again to introduce the past few seasons. It would be a cool way to sort of shake up the formula.
Yeah, and I also like, you know, in Survivor New Zealand, for example, in the first season, they've had it where, like, you have to run it and get different things. They've done that in US Survivor as well. And that was just, like, a twist on this. And they still had, like, Steffi stealing the bag of rice from Mubba. So if you're going to pillage the other tribe, you know, at least you maybe have some deniability if you, you know, if they're blindfolded and can't actually see who was doing that. Although Nico is narrating it, so...
Yeah, I think Steffi is the representation of, like, just the don't give an F attitude between the way she approached Leanne and the way she just grabbed the rice out of poor Lao Mei's hands. I think just showcases the attitude that she has, which works really well. But who knows? We're looking way too far ahead, like Jacques' extra vote to the jury. But if she continues that attitude when people start making up the jury, it might come back to bite her a bit. We'll see.
Yeah, she's like Guatemala-era Steph LaGrosa for me at the moment. Like, that's the vibes that I'm getting. And yeah, hilarious that she would steal the food there. I thought it was really interesting how they, you know, they pick a leader and then the leaders had to obviously choose the weakest. And before I understood what was happening with the challenge, when they just sent them to the Island of Secrets, I kind of thought that they had just made them name the weakest for no reason, kind of like just to troll them.
Same. But I think that's a way to also stir the pot, though, too, right? It's like when they had them... It's like when they do the burn book challenge,
yeah,
you know, the touchy subjects.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, who doesn't deserve to win? You might get a shot at pizza for guessing the correct answer. But at the end of the day, what you leave with is more hurt feelings than anything. That's sort of like your actual reward. And I feel like we might have gone that there for a second. I totally agree. But I think it was a cool opportunity to put them in the hero position. It didn't really help C-Pay that much at the end of the day, considering that while she did lead her tribe to a big victory, they still didn't like her at the end of the day. And it seems like Leticia sort of might be in the same spot as we move on to talk about Lao Mei. But again, Jacques was able to really ingratiate himself into his tribe, though maybe it's just because Tanya has been a big blaring distraction from all that.
Yeah, can you imagine if, like, it literally was, okay, now you've been picked out as the leader, which is bad. You're going to go spend a night away from, you know, the other tribe members, which is really bad for them and for you. Like, they didn't have that massive manpower. You know, Kubus is an actual architect, so they didn't have that in a very important part of the game in the first day. And obviously the three leaders missed out on their bonding time. And if it was like, and for no reason, just literally just insult one of your tribe mates right now. I do want to talk about Lao Mei. I want to talk about Leticia because, look, I love her. She reminds me so much of my grandma. And I said that as well about Shane Gould. And I've had a talk with my cousin and we both agree that we need to stop seeing our grandmother in older female Survivor contestants that might speak more to us psychologically. But all I know is that I feel very warmly towards her. And if they vote her out, I probably will cry.
I think she has a great attitude towards things. You know, I loved her sort of pulling the Laura Moret card when Rocco said that his mother's name is also Letitia. Like, I think she has a great attitude about things. We can talk about, you know, maybe the fault lines that are already coming up on the tribe, but I don't know. I feel like if they go to tribal council, I feel like she still might not be long for this game, which really sucks. But I feel like she's one of those people that sticks out like a sore thumb from a demographic perspective, not to mention that she's the one that, even though everything was equalized on the puzzle, really slowed Lao Mei down on the balance beam to the point where you showed me a Biostrath actually posted something on Instagram about her getting helped up on that balance beam. It was a Chris Doherty level of performance. Maybe if they keep winning, she can ingratiate herself personally, especially if other people start to get on each other's nerves. But I feel like she's such a fun persona, but I mean, she still just is the really the odd one out that I'm... We didn't see too much of Lao Mei compared to the other two tribes / Tanya, but I feel like we're still getting the narrative that, like, yes, she's on the outside, even in this newly constituted foursome that Mike is trying to propose.
Yeah, I mean, well, we saw the boy foursome, we saw this new foursome that she's not in, so we didn't see her make an alliance with anyone, which we did with the rest of the tribe. I mean, like, I just love her, and I really love my grandma.
Like she loves Lao Mei, which Nico made fun of, which, Nico, I'm gonna hold you a bit to contempt here, because you make fun of Letitia for saying, I love them. But correct me if I'm wrong here, did Cobus not say the exact same thing about Ta'alo, like, right before she did?
I mean, what else are you supposed to say when, you know, you're asked about these people that you're standing next to for the first time? I like what she's doing, though, with Letitia, because she's going to lean into being the mom, which does not work out often. Not great to be the mom, but what else are you going to be? You know, you're not going to connect with these people on, like, a friendship level. You know, you're outside of the demographic. Let you be the carer. She's a nurse. Be that maternal figure. Maybe, you know what, maybe it'll lead her to coming second, but at least she'll have made it through the next 18 weeks of being on my TV. So better than being the first boot on the tribe. I think that she might be connecting with Rocco after he did call her the weakest, you know, in that mother role. And she had some chops. I mean, she was looking around that well for the idol, and that is where it is.
So close!
Yeah! So, I mean, Rocco unfortunately has the clue, so he probably will find it, but, like, what a good read that I wish to God that Rocco unfortunately has come back now, but before he did, I just so wish he could have got it.
I know, that would have been amazing if she sort of Ralph Kaisered it and, like, stumbled upon it before the big idol person, or in this case, the person who had the clue, was able to actually find it. I mean, I really want her to stick around as well. Maybe we should slot her in as, like, final tribal council loser, unfortunately, based on how that demographic has been doing as of late. I totally agree with you of playing into your role, though. You know, I think that some people have been able to benefit from the fact that, like, especially if there are younger people out there, I feel like maybe in a different season where there are less, like, married people with kids in their 20s and more socially vulnerable people in their 20s, they might need a mother to lean on. Sort of like, again, Keith with Reem on poor Extinction Island. And maybe Letitia could fill that role. Maybe she just unfortunately got dealt a bad hand and that she's living with a bunch of responsible people that they might not necessarily need that. But good on her for saying, like, hey, if I've been dealt a crappy hand based on my age and gender, I'm going to try to play it and bluff with it as much as I can, even if it comes up being the losing hand.
But, like, of all the tribes, this does seem to be more of, like, the frat house tribe with, like, Letitia as the den mother, because you've got Mike, who's really young, Rocco, who's not, you know, not in one of those, like, married young people, you know, character types. You've got Darrell as well. Mubba, I don't remember. I don't know if she's married. I don't think that she is. I might be wrong on that. And Rose Lee, who is, and then Jeffrey, who also is. But, like, there's more maybe of that, those younger people. Mike seems to really be heading up, you know, the vibe of the tribe and the connections. I also really, really like Mike. He's someone that
Thank you.
I know, I was talking about
it. You're saying that my comparison of the season is not the guy actually named Mike, though. I cannot.
You're nothing like
hair.
Mike.
He's got locks for days.
Yeah, no, I was talking about this with Peter today, my fiance, and I was, like, talking about Mike and Rob, and he was like, is the next person Liana? Like, yeah, it's hard when the people that have your name, that happens so rarely to me. But he's someone where, when I was talking about him in the preseason, I said I couldn't find a lot of him. I've since found his social media, but he's one of the people for me who really pops on screen. He's got such a good energy about him. He, you know, he said he's a super fan, and I said I would decide whether I believe that based on how much I like him in the show. And I really like him, so I'm going to believe that he's a super fan. I love everything that he's doing in terms of the connections he's made. Obviously, you know, Rocco came to him with this four-person alliance. Jeffrey seems way more willing to go with Mike's plan. He has the girls as well, which we've heard from only from his perspective, but he seems to be really in the core of everything that's happening on this tribe.
So I will say, from a personality perspective, I absolutely love him. He has such great quotes here, like rugged is the least apt term to describe me. When Nico asked Mike why he picked Rocco to be the leader, he said he smells of leadership, which just feels like, I don't know exactly what that connotates, but I feel like, I feel like an Olympian would definitely smell like leadership. That is palpable on the nostrils. I will say I like that he is at the core of things. I don't necessarily like how flighty he's coming off as. You know, I hopefully Rocco isn't catching on to the fact that he already wants to be done with that guy's alliance. Because if he's able to get away with that, I totally agree. He's in a fantastic position to be in. But from the perspective we were getting from people like Jeff, I just wonder if he's being a bit too out there with it. And as a result, he might crumble a bit. Maybe this is sort of like his youthful energy as well of like, ironically enough, Tanya's doing the same thing. I've got to have as many outs as possible, but you just got to make sure that people aren't talking to each other about how you have all those outs, because that's when you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar.
See, I thought differently. I thought that Jeff really did want to be more with Mike's side of things. Like, I felt like Jeff didn't like that he was approached last by Rocco, which I guess just seemed like more of a logistic thing. I mean, then Rocco did give them all of this information about the clue. So honestly, Rocco seemed on the level, but he did come in a day late. And I feel like Mike and some of the other contestants are saying, well, we don't need to just go by guys. You know, we've had 24 hours or 48 hours at this point to spend with each other. We'll make an alliance with the people we feel best about. And obviously he feels like he has those connections. He didn't say no to the alliance because that would be really dumb, but he seems to be making an alliance based on, you know, as Tony Vlachos would say, you know, an alliance of comfort over numbers, or I don't remember which one was good, but whatever the good one is, it's based on having the connections. And I really like what he's doing. I feel like, is Rocco going to be the one to kind of out that and outmaneuver him strategically? Like, Mike is way ahead strategically on that tribe.
Yeah, I think it is. He went with alliance of comfort, because Mike even says it here about it's about being on the bottom of the right alliance. And it's an interesting concept, especially in the first few days of the game. I think in the first few days of the game, you just adopt that principle of accepting as many deals as you can, which Mike seemed to be doing. I don't know. I feel like maybe we have different takes on how Jeff was reacting to things, because then Jeff sort of talks about when they're sort of hanging out in the water of, OK, now I don't want to be regarded as a flipper. Which is interesting, considering that he seemed to be, at least from my perspective, the guy that was willing to play that villain role so much. Mm. Maybe he just takes on the Dan Foley adage that flippers never win. But I thought his reaction to things, to Mike's proposal, was very, very interesting.
Yeah, see, I feel like now I need to go back and rewatch it, because I was definitely thinking like he liked Mike's plan and just felt on the bottom of Rocco's plan. But yeah, maybe I was misinterpreting that. He definitely didn't want to be on the bottom of something. But which one did he feel on the bottom of? Because he was approached, it seems like, last, for Rocco's and possibly for Mike's as well.
Yeah, because I think Rocco, and we'll definitely talk about Rocco, but I believe he pulled aside Mike and Durao, right, first to give them the clue?
Yeah. Although I do remember that Jeffrey said that he didn't want to be dictated to by Rocco and Durao. So I think that's why I thought that I feel like maybe they're a strong two. They're the two, like, obviously athletic gym junkies. We didn't really get a lot from Durao in this episode, and I didn't get a lot from him on social media, but it maybe feels like they're kind of like the physical center of the tribe, and maybe Jeffrey and Mike can kind of connect more on a strategic level. I was looking at it like, I feel like Mike's plan is really working there, and I really hope he sticks around for a long time, because he's great.
Yeah. Well, he also reminds me a bit, actually, of Adam from Survivor New Zealand as well, in terms of, like, funny guy, has a lot of social play, and can be a bit of a wild card, too. Let's talk about Rocco, because I feel like even more than Nicole, Rocco has completely defied my preseason expectations, and not necessarily in a completely good way, but I totally thought, my God, they recruited this guy to say that they had an Olympian on. Snooze. All he's talking about is being competitive and improving his golf game. What the hell is he going to do with this game? I was so surprised, and not to get too much into the Island of Secrets, but to have him go through Paul's pants was crazy to me from an expectations perspective. Granted, I feel like he was the best on the Island of Secrets and maybe the worst on the island itself, considering, again, it's not about content, it's intent, the way he was sort of approaching that guy's alliance, but completely defied any expectations I had of him preseason and what he did this episode.
We probably should get into the Island of Secrets, because it's been really hard. It's really hard not to completely talk about it with all of these tribes, but
nothing happened on the Island of Secrets, Shane, and we have to believe Cobus on that one.
Well, it seems like nothing happened strategically between the three, which is a little crazy. Maybe we just didn't see it, but for all these guys to be picked out as leaders, you'd really think that they would all kind of be going to each other. Like, yeah, you know, we'll have each other's back at the merge or at a swap. So maybe we just didn't see it, but that just seems like a really obvious given. But you know, for Rocco to come back a day late, you miss out on bonding with the tribe. That's pretty nerve wracking. They might be suspicious of you that you've done what I've just said you obviously should have done. So, you know, I guess, again, it's pretty hard not to be aggressive just to try and lock something down when you're sure people, you know, have that head start on you. But yeah, as I said, I really, really liked what he did at the Island of Secrets. I mean, he literally had his cake and ate it too. I mean, not literally, mm-hmm. but he mm-hmm. got both. He got fire. He got the clue. Crazy to me that Paul would leave it out to the point where he could get it. But it really just validated for me how much I think fire was the right choice here. As I've said, way too public this early. And the fact that he could come back, be really transparent with his tribe, be able to rat out the other two people on the other tribe. So it just, I think, made like an easy connection, even though he's not really gelling with them now. I feel like as a big guy, you would think, oh my God, this is the kind of alpha player who's going to go for broke and take the idol. And I really admire the restraint, and he didn't know he was going to see the clue. So for him to do that and make a more conservative choice that might take him further is something that I really respected.
Yeah. And it's interesting comparing his approach with Paul's approach when it came to telling the truth, because they both did. But whereas Rocco was able to sort of paint it as those other two guys made this choice, but I did the honorable thing. You have Paul saying, well, I picked this clue, but I couldn't have. I could have totally been selfish, but I decided to reveal the clue to them. Like, it's two totally different ways of coming off, in my opinion, where it felt a bit extraneous to mention that. It almost hurt Paul and saying like, hey, guys, I'm going to guilt you a bit by saying this is what I could have done, but I did it for the good of the tribe. I think Rocco was able to endear himself in that moment, at least, by being like, hey, I'm working for the betterment of the tribe. I'm not only open about what happened, but I'm going to show you how loyal and honest I am to the group overall, which then, you know, is able to let him be a bit more duplicitous by bringing the guys aside, which I think I could understand why he would do that, just because, you know, maybe he's trying to build meat shields. Maybe he just gets along better with the guys. I'm not entirely sure, but it does feel like Doral might be the guy who gets along easiest with him. But like we talked about before, Mike and Jeff aren't exactly... Like, if Nathan and Rob are the other two guys on this tribe, I could see this very ironclad. But I don't think those two guys are necessarily ones who gel well enough with Rocco to fall under his tutelage, even if he gave them an idol clue.
Yeah, I feel like he came back with the fire and everyone seemed really satisfied with that. I don't think he needed to tell them the clue. It obviously didn't really endear him to them because a couple of them were already thinking of flipping on him. But especially because you give someone a clue and they can just go find the idol without you. I feel like if you want to endear yourself, maybe find the idol yourself and then show people. But he's such a big target. He's just been caught out as the leader. I would probably just keep that kind of thing to myself for a rainy day. And you already endeared yourself and you already were transparent and you gave people information by talking about how you gave them the fire. And I feel like that would have been a better play than necessarily like giving all your cards to, at what is this point, you know, most of the tribe.
Yeah, I can understand, though, of him being like, again, I want to come across as open as possible so that not only do I not come off as duplicitous, but people could actually approach me and come to me because they know that I'm an honest guy. Sort of like what happened to Paul with the amigos over on the other tribe. It just sort of ended up not playing that well because idols are so individualistic that I think on paper, sort of like what Cobus did, you'd want to keep it to yourself. I do agree that I'm not entirely sure why he would share the clue unless they're going to go on like a tribe idol hunt.
Yeah.
Like the green tribe was doing. They could, you know, someone like Mike could very easily find it now and be like, oh, I didn't find it, you know, and now he has an idol in his pocket and they're none the wiser.
It's a double-edged sword because he's trying to make up for lost time that, you know, he didn't have by having like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, information is power. So you're giving them information to connect them to you, but you also don't really know these people and you don't know if they're going to trust you. So Mike didn't really, you know, as he said, it wasn't a connection. It wasn't an alliance based on like a real connection. So it's not for me strong enough to be giving those people that information. You do need to have a really solid alliance. And of course, Mike and Jeffrey, who seem to be turning against him now, could go find the idol and not include him in that at all. So I feel like that was a misstep, but I like taking the fire. You know, it's a very different situation than what we've seen. And I want to get your thoughts on the Island of Secrets in general, because we've seen people, you know, like in Kagayan or in Chocantins, be sent back to an island in a very private way and have this dilemma, which, you know, there's more of a debate there for me of whether you should take the idol. Of course, it does end up screwing these people at a swap or a merge, but at least, you know, not being great for them. And then there's obviously the really public stuff where two people are chosen to go, you know, on a mission. And so that I never, ever, ever think take the idol because it's way too public. And this is somewhere in between. But then as it came out to me how public it was, the fact that for some reason Rocco knew, I mean, we know he saw Paul's clue, but how did he know that Kubus had taken the clue? Like, that's very public to me. It's going to be a very, very intimate season of communication if people from different tribes are mingling on the Island of Secrets. So for me, there's way too much information getting out there, even between the tribes, that it's just like having that really suspect thing, or, you know, next to your name is not a good thing. So I feel like Rocco, until he got to the island, was giving too much information, which I can understand the fear of coming late. But until then, he was playing this very, very well.
Yeah. So on the note of the Island of Secrets, I mean, I really hope that this wasn't the only episode where we get tribe cross mingling, because I totally agree that I think if you combine the mysterious aspects of Ghost Island with the tribe mingling that came with the outpost, that's going to provide for the best entertainment. We could see another Exile Alliance form, a la Survivor Token Chains when they did Exiled Dune, as it were. It, as you said, it's a bit surprising that the three guys didn't do it, but I guess they were just so, I don't know, so much trying to get their own head in the game and checking out the various hanging urns that have adorned the shelter that they weren't necessarily concentrating on it. But I hope that they use this as an opportunity instead of just sending one person to like find an advantage or make a decision, because then we start getting a bit into like the game theory of it all as well. Like, maybe send two people and you say, okay, we're going to send you to individual stations, and you have, we'll say like, well, let's say we have an idol clue for each of you. If you both pick the idol clue, then you, neither one of you get it. So like one person has to pick it, and you have to trick the other person into not picking it. Like, if we do those types of mind games, I'm going to really enjoy, because I feel like that's a good way to sort of elevate this, send someone off to a mysterious Island of Secrets structure that's literally in the title of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what we don't want is for people to be getting, you know, idols and advantages every episode, because we just saw that happen on US Survivor, which I'm, as I said, really not talking to. But if they can kind of have the balance, like Jacques' advantage was not that powerful, so it's like little things that might be able to help you without like ruling the game, I think that would be really good. But I do definitely think they could have the really cool mechanisms of something like the outpost, where it might be a game or a challenge or a dilemma or something like that, but, you know, or, you know, a secret, as the title would suggest. And then you have, you know, the intermingling and maybe even like sleeping over of something like an exile, where you talking, when you're talking with people on the other tribe, and then you have the Ghost Island element of it all. So I think it could be really cool. Something that my fiance actually pointed out to me was that the idol is a key, and there are two keys on the logo. So I'm wondering why it's so key heavy. Does it open something? Like, that would be a very cool reveal for me down the track.
It would be interesting if there was like a big treasure chest in the middle of the Island of Secrets, and you had to combine the idols from all three tribes to open a chest and reveal a super idol. Ooh. You know, something stupid like that would be a lot of fun. It's also interesting in that I think Nico brought up in the very beginning when he was talking to the tribes about it, that it would be full. The Island of Secrets would have like secrets, both good and bad. I wonder what bad would mean. My mind is very much in the X on the Beach mentality of like, the Shack of Secrets, where like they would go into this down this basement, essentially, like, I don't know, it had really crappy lighting, and it was this big tiki hut that had like, here's your ex-girlfriend talking badly about you. Like, I mean, imagine if Nicole went and it was like Leanne talking crap about her. That would have been very interesting. But I wonder what that means. Could it be like, lose a vote? Could it mean you can't go to the next tribal council or something like that? There's just this idea of bad secrets is so interesting to me.
Yeah, like their face with their Bogart, which for like Leanne, I do think would have been Nicole. Like,
maybe that's one reason why she thought, like, I mean, she said it was ridiculous why she went. And I mean, she could have said ridiculous and gotten rid of the Bogart. So maybe that's why she's used that particular word.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, the key now is Chekhov's key. Like, I definitely think there needs to be like a chest at some point in the season to open. But no, I think it could be very fun. Let's get on to the Chizzy, which is something I introduced in the preseason, something we did for Survivor New Zealand, which is why it's called the Chizzy, named after New Zealand.
I was going to say, I tried to convince you not to pry too much into our individual conversations, but I tried to get into, say, like, we had to change it for Survivor South Africa because it makes next to no sense at this point. But you are all about name recognition, so the Chizzy it is.
Well, firstly, I love Matt Chisholm. The second thing is, like, I feel like the Chizzy is a concept at this point. It's beyond Survivor New Zealand, which actually did get breasted.
It literally is beyond Survivor New Zealand.
Exactly. And like, what a nice testament to it, you know, beyond the grave. You know, I'm going to be keeping it in my coverage of Australian Survivor. The mechanism is, you know, 3 points to the best play of the episode, then 2 points to second best, 1 point to the third best. And I just feel like the Chile, it is what it is. You know, it can't be anything else. Like, LaRue Butta as well, who is the executive producer of Survivor South Africa, also was like, maybe rename it. And I was like, the Chile is really my legacy in RHAP. Like, I don't have anything else. I didn't even create it. Henry from Australian Survivor created it, but I still feel like this is all I have. And on my tombstone, I want them to say hashtag Chile. So we're keeping it as the Chile.
Oh God, if they use hashtags on tombstones, I might,
oh my God,
I might be done with this world if that ends up
you
being
the
case.
You will be done. Well, yeah,
it doesn't matter who created the idea. You know, Edison was able to patent so many things that he inherently did not invent. So Shannon, you are the Thomas Edison of this podcast right now. And I suppose we can keep carrying the cheese. Do not boil yourself down to this one concept, though, Shannon. You are much more than a chizzy.
I don't need to be more. Like, I feel like I'm very happy about it. You know, it's a really good way of analyzing the episode, seeing, you know, who are the best players throughout. My brother slash intern, Jason, I haven't even asked him, but Jay, can you make me a spreadsheet, please? I assume that he's going to do it. We'll have all the math. This is the only math that I do. And we'll see who was the best player of the season in the completely appropriately named Chile for Survivor South Africa. Okay, well, I'll start with my points then, considering I've, like, taken over this whole thing. I felt so bad. You're like, let's change the name. And I was like, no. this is what it's like to work with me. It was also, like, 2 a.m. for Mike. All right, 3 points I'm going to give to the best player of this episode, which I believe was Nathan, who, as we said, wasn't even almost a target, despite having to be carried everywhere by Rob. And, like, also, maybe I would injure myself. You know, pretend to injure myself if it meant I was going to be carried everywhere by Rob. My fiance said that he's like my Ryan Reynolds, you know, like you can't trust someone in a bar when they see Ryan Reynolds. That's how I feel about Rob. I really got off track there. Nathan is someone who protected his ally in CPay. He, you know, got his way despite not being able to talk in these communal situations. It had to be at tribal, which was unfortunate, but he still got what he wanted. So that is 3 points that I'm giving to Nathan. 2 points I'm going to give to Nicole, who I also feel really benefited from getting Leanne out of the game. Leanne has resented her, as I've said, for a couple of years. Could not have been good for Nicole to have her in the game. I docked her a point from the three because I really didn't love that she was the one who threw out that indecisiveness. That basically, yeah, your life means nothing to me in this game. That's what they were kind of all putting out there to CPay and Leanne. But I still feel like she really got her way in getting rid of Leanne. And I'm going to give 1 point to Mike, who I think I've argued in this podcast was kind of at the center of his tribe, leading it strategically. And, you know, everyone that I can see really wants to work with him. My honorable mentions, which we also do in the Chizzy because it's a super long award, hashtag Chizzy. Jacques getting the advantage, not quite enough for me to make the points, but still wanted to honor it. And Rocco, if the episode had ended at the end of Island of Secrets, definitely would have got a point for the way he handled that. But, you know, lost a couple of points just kind of at the end of the episode there with the way he handled that. So 21 people on the cast, 5 of whom I've mentioned, and that is the Chizzy for you. Mike, who are you giving your points to?
Yes, if this was a 20-minute episode, I'd probably give my points to Rocco as well. I will say off the top here, I mean, it's going to be tough for me to give out to honor strategic acumen over the course of this season. And it's interesting as well in that in these previous Chizzy installments, the Chizstallments, you've had a rotating guest every week. So it really has been shaken up by just everyone's whims each and every week on the podcast. This one is going to have the two of us pretty consistent. So it's pretty much going to be weighted by our scores, which makes me feel even more pressure to assess this accurately. So let's see how I do. Nathan, I also gave 3 points.
Okay.
I think that he was the one who was able to determine the boot here. And I think he did so without sacrificing his social capital. You know, I was nervous that he really might have stuck his neck out too much to protect CPay, but it really does seem like he didn't come across as too sacrificial and people were not raising their eyebrows too much to why would he want to keep CPay around if it really doesn't matter who ended up going here. And I mean, I just can't get past the fact that this dude injures himself, something that could have gotten rid of like 85% of Survivor players previously, especially on such a small tribe, but they did not bat an eye as to the point where he currently has the idol hanging around his neck. I'm assuming it's going to go back into Paul's red basketball jersey shortly after the tribal council, but
or his sideways
the
fact cap.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact that he was able to get away with it so scot-free this episode really makes me think he's going to do super well here. So he's out to a resounding lead already with 6 points. I gave 2 points to Jacques just because I was looking at like sort of the where he started the game and where he is right now, where, again, going from being called out as the weakest on his tribe to leading his tribe to no complaints, getting an advantage for himself and ending up in one of three major four-person coalitions and without really people looking at him negatively. And maybe that's just due in part to Tanya being Tanya, but I think he really bettered his position over the course of one episode entirely. So I'm going to give him points there. I ended up giving 1 point to Nicole, too. I do, again, acknowledge that she was able to get rid of someone that could have really been bad for her down the line, even if she did promise her loyalty right there, right then. I docked her a couple points because, A, it came off much more like Nathan was the one who was really pushing for it, even if Nicole had the more personal stakes in getting rid of Leanne. And just, I was a bit turned off by the way her and Steffi were approaching the Leanne C-Pay stuff. They were approaching, as we talked about before, a bit more cold and impersonal, which would have been fine if they were getting rid of both C-Pay and Leanne in this tribal council, but I wonder if the way they've been behaving might come back to bite them. So I couldn't exactly give her full marks there. A couple of other honorable mentions. Ting Ting I put in there for just being able to not be on the outside of Tanya's alliances. Being able to sort of go along with the plan, even though she was, I think, initially perceived as an outsider from the get-go. I put Steffi in there, too, for the decision that she was making. And I gave a point to Kobus. I know that you said he's going to get called out very easily for saying nothing happened at Island of Secrets. But the fact that he was someone who came in late and did not ruffle any feathers, as opposed to the other two, drew any attention to himself, I think speaks well for his position in the game. It might be on Den next week when he talks to Jacques about that idol's clue, but I think he's okay right now. So that's my chizzy for the week.
It would literally be impossible, though, to ruffle feathers in a tribe with Tanya. Like, the feathers have been plucked off at that point. Like, there's no feathers left. Like, how could anyone, you know, even if they do find out he lied about the clue, like, I still don't think that would save Tanya.
Yeah, that's true. She basically, the tribe is a naked bird at this point because all the feathers are just off it right now.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's the chizzy. That's something that we're going to be doing every week. Another thing that is an installment of this podcast, which is classically South Africa, which we're pulling over from last season, is Biostrath. Now, Biostrath is back tweeting about Survivor South Africa. I love this so much. I love Biostrath. I actually got into a quote tweet cycle with them. They clearly don't have any idea who I am, despite how much time I spend thinking and talking about them, which is fine. I mean, it's just like kind of my love for them from afar. And I also can't work out if the account is still run by the same social media manager. Like, it's still a lot of fun, but I don't feel like it's as shady.
Yeah, so I guess we should bring this up for people that are watching the season for the first time. So last season, Biostrath, which is one of the main sponsors of Survivor South Africa, correct me if I'm wrong here, Shannon, it's sort of like an energy drink. Is that the best way to describe Biostrath, aside from just calling it everything, the alpha, the omega of life?
Is it a drink or is it like a supplement? I feel like we should know this because it's advertised to us so much.
I believe it's a supplement because I don't think it's like, I think it's available in like little 5-hour energy-esque bottles. But what we noticed last season is the person behind the Biostrath account would live tweet the episode, but much like many of us in the Survivor community, would say pretty shady things about people who were participating in the game. And some
always
of them,
with the eye emojis as well.
Yeah, and sometimes they were relating it back to Biostrath, and sometimes they were just doing it just to be shady. So, I mean, hopefully they did not let go of that person because that person was absolutely brilliant. But I guess we shall see in this game what Shannon concocted for me last year to see if I could figure out the voice behind Biostrath.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we like invited that the person behind the Biostrath account to come on the podcast. Like, their takes are good. They're a fan, live tweeting it. You know, there's a lot of talk around these like corporations basically trying to have a personality and talk with the cool kids, much like Paul and his sideways cap. But you know what? For Biostrath, it's actually really working. So I have 4 tweets here. 3 of them are real. 1 of them are fake from Biostrath. And let's see if you can kind of work out who the either same or new social media manager is. We have no idea. All right. So this one is responding to a tweet about Rob's eyes. I love getting to talk about Rob's eyes. It says, some say that they could get lost in them. We have way too much of focus for that. They are good eyes, though. Eye emoji. Hashtag Biostrath Survivor. Hashtag Survivor SA.
Okay. So they're saying, like, they're good. Not great, but good.
Yeah. And, like, that's the wrong take, biostress account. And they all have hashtag biostress survivor, hashtag survivor essay. So just take that as a given. The next
is
one,
that going to be on your gravestone as well? Your tombstone is really, like, losing real estate the more involved you get with these people.
Why is this not the first podcast this year that I've spoken about what will be on my tombstone? I'm very focused on my own death. Hashtag, okay, here lies Shannon Gaze. She ate too much mayonnaise. Hashtag shizzy. Hashtag biostress survivor. Hashtag survivor essay. We did it.
I think we need to afford two tombstones just to, like, fill up your one plot with all the things you're shilling out.
Yeah, like, the character count on tombstones probably isn't a lot. And for anyone who's seen my tweets, like, it's probably not enough for me. So I need, like, a massive tombstone. My mom is really not going to enjoy this portion of the podcast. Mom, skip ahead 30 seconds.
The Twitter tombstone needs to upgrade to 280 characters instead of the typical 140. You're living in the past here.
I literally could not deal with 140 characters on Twitter. Like, I definitely don't want to have to, like, spend the entire afterlife with a 140 character tombstone.
And then there should be an edit button on the tombstone, you know? If you want to, if you made a mistake on what you put in there for your beloved grandfather, like, go back and you should be able to redo it without paying the price.
Yeah, Twitter tombstones is totally a thing. All right. So the first tweet, as we saw, was about Rob's eyes and getting lost in them. Second tweet, Leanne is too concerned with her rivalry with Nicole. Can she change her focus to stay in the game? All right.
Okay, well, I guess Biostrath is really, this guy is all about focus this season, apparently.
That's
is that the
Biostrath
theme of Biostrath
is
that helps you focus?
Yeah, so how can you, this is what it was from, like, whatever, 6 months. I know you had a kid, but
Biostrath was all about, like, getting energized.
It's all of those things, Mike. It's literally all of those things. All right, then they had one, which they had a picture of, like, the tribal council where everyone was, like, talking behind the backs. And it was, like, when there is an inside joke and no one wants to share it with the greater group, who can relate?
Okay, all right. I'm surprised they didn't say, like, why aren't these people keeping their focus up and listening to what's going on behind them? Hashtag Biostrath.
Well, it's not just the one note. It's, like, three different notes. And then the last one was, looks like Nathan could use a dose of Biostrath for faster recovery. Hey, Mahindra's SA, can you help us get some to him? Mahindra is another sponsor. It's a car company that they have. So there's now, like, cross sponsor, you know, much like the Island of Secrets. They're all on kind of, like, one island communicating.
Now, Mahindra, we didn't do anything out there. We were just talking brands. We were talking about expos that we like to go to. Yeah. Nothing happened out there. Steers was off. I don't know. God knows what Steers Burgers
Steers
was doing.
Steers chose to take the fire, you know.
Yes, absolutely. to cook up some nice, delicious burgers. So, I mean, this fourth one has nothing to do with Biostrath. Like, Biostrath...
He needs to recover.
Yeah, but that's a false claim completely. You can't say, oh, yes. It will help you with your bones. That's what Biostrath will do. Like, now we're getting into, like, the weird magic tonic water, you know, the snake oil salesman that hopefully Biostrath is not. Okay, so I'm going to say that the first two are real because I feel like you said focus is a theme and they want to sort of keep that branding in there. So I'm between three and four, between when you're in a group meeting versus, like, the hashtag relatable content versus, hey, Nathan, this will help your foot get better. I'm going to say number three is the false one.
You were wrong. It was actually the one about Leanne. Poor Leanne didn't even get a Biostrath tweet, but she did get a billboard, which Nicole didn't get. So I feel like that's the one thing she's won over Nicole. I also pulled what Biostrath is doing this season and which they also did last season is they make a lot of polls that don't get a lot of responses. So we're going to play a little game, which I think when we have a guest will be really fun because we can do it kind of like Price is Right. But at the moment it's just you. So I'm going to give you some over-unders. Okay.
To be fair, the Price is Right has also played with one person, so.
Okay, what show am I thinking of then?
Well, no, they bid initially for the thing, but then they only bring up one person to play the game. It's not like everyone plays together to, you know, play Plinko.
Okay, I haven't watched the show in like a very long time, but anyway, this is what the game I've made. So they had a poll that said, Tanya's plans have our head spinning. Do you think it's wise to make this many alliances this soon? So what, I'm giving you an over-under of 20% who said that it is a good idea to make that many alliances this soon. Do you think more or less than 20% of people said that?
Oh, 20%. They're going to say 20 because I'm like, okay, definitely under because I don't think 20 people voted in this poll from what you were saying.
The 20%.
Just very, yeah, very low numbers. I'm going to say, I mean, that's the thing. If you have five people voting and one person votes yes, that's 20%. So I might be skewed by the ratio here. I'm going to say under still. I'm going to go with my gut.
Actually, 36% of people thought that Tanya was doing well. And actually 44 people responded, which is very good traction for Biostrath. So really good job.
Are they all? Are they all Tanya and her family responding to this?
Well, let's Tanya's dad is in jail, so he can't vote in this poll. He's a bank robber.
Yeah, did she get Tanya's dad's statue to vote?
It's all of, yeah, Tanya's dad's statue. All the townspeople, she was like, look, he burned those checks for you, and now you need to do a favor for me. Go to the Biostrath account and vote that my plans were good, please. Since 1976, yeah, you've been in debt to my family, and this is how you can repay us.
Yeah, this is the one favor that I'm calling in, please.
To the townspeople. All right, another one. It says, focus is the name of the game. Which team do you think will win this challenge? Hashtag Biostrath Survivor, hashtag Survivor SA. So do you think, what is the over-under of people who voted for it? I've given you 15 people. Over-under.
Read the poll one more time.
It was, which team do you think will win the immunity challenge?
So more than 15 people voted in it. I feel like that's not as much of an incendiary poll that makes me, it's not as much of a clickbait poll that makes me be like, yes, I need to make my opinion heard. So I'm going to go with under again. Maybe it's because I'm talking to someone from down under, but I'm going to keep saying under.
It's so six people voted in this poll. Three of those voted for Ta'alo. One person voted for Sa'ula, and two people voted for Lamei. I can work that out because I can divide six.
Wow, a 3-2-1 poll. Sarit could never.
It was a 3-2-1 poll for sure. All right. Okay. This is the last one. It says, what choice would you make? Fire for the tribe and clue for you. So the Biostrath responders, I don't actually have here how many people voted. I think from memory it was 10. So which option do you think won?
Almost twice as many as who's going to win the challenge.
Yeah, and it's easier math for me as well. All right, so fire or the clue. What do the Biostrath responders, the very vocal minority, feel like the contestants should have done?
I feel like Survivor Twitter is very shrewd, and they also think that Tanya's wheeling and dealing, for the most part, is great, or at least that town back in the day from 1976 thinks that it is. So I'm going to say that they went with the clue over fire.
They did. That was right. So I feel like I don't even know what your score was for this. I don't remember if you know Biostrath or not, but you seem to do pretty well.
Yeah, I think I've evened out at the end of the day. So I think that's all I can sort of like maintain as a nice balanced track record moving forward.
All right. So we will keep up to date with what Biostrath is doing. I need to check in with the other sponsors. Honestly, like Steers tweeted that they were going to be, you know, sponsoring it and tweeting along. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. But the second Biostrath came back, I like dropped Steers like a hot potato, like a hot steak, because I just love Biostrath so much.
Yeah. So clearly you're playing favorites right now.
Yeah, they're my favorite. All right. Some questions that we got from the listeners. Kevin Doherty says, do you guys get an Amy Cusack vibe from Nicole? She seems stone cold in her play, and I mean that in the most positive way.
Interesting, because I would say that Steffi is the more stone cold, but the thing about Amy Cusack for me is that while we might remember her as being stone cold, if you actually rewatch Survivor Vanuatu, she's actually a very good warm shoulder for a lot of her tribe members to cry. And there's even a fun scene where when Da, the native Vanuatu village person, drops by to visit the women's camp. Like, she's hugging and comforting Eliza as they all sing a prayer song as Dob paddles away. So I feel like Amy may not have been as cold as we remember. That's a brief tangent into Survivor history. That being said, I could see where the comparison comes from, but I would honestly compare Steffi more so to that colder side of Amy, just considering how OTT she was in the attitude that she gave Leanne when Leanne was trying to approach her.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people seem to think that Nicole was very cold. I don't know. I just feel
it's a
like
thing. It's going to be a thing now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, between the two of us, if anyone hasn't listened to this podcast, we will make a pun out of anything we possibly can. I didn't really see that from her. Like, she actually seemed to be emotionally reacting to what Leanne was kind of giving to her from that really emotional response of keeping her around and having always admired her. And that might have been the only reason she considered even keeping her. So I didn't get like an ice queen vibe. I just got a more like always perfect, always winning, just wanting to play a perfect game, much like Chris Underwood. And that was more the vibe that I got from her.
I wonder if it's because we had that scene where Leanne did approach her and did seem at least genuine at the outset with giving her pitch of like, you know me, I'm going to be in your corner. And then she responded, and she didn't respond by being like, hell no, we're getting rid of you. But more
yeah,
so
Steffi
like,
did that.
Yeah, she was more so, I couldn't promise her that I would keep her around. So I just said, hey, best of luck with you. See you outside of the show. And so maybe that's sort of what people are taking. But yeah, I think we're assigning the wrong temperature, perhaps. I think Steffi might be the one that we might need to put some coats on Angelina style, to how cold she is right now.
Yeah, she's a mom as well, and she's fighting for like sick kids and stuff. So she's got a story there, and I feel like that really caring nature will come out. David Wishler says, "What would your Survivor T-shirt say?" Much like Leanne.
I mean, I guess, are we going with the Leanne thing of like, I mean, I don't want to copy from your tombstone, Shannon, and use a number of hashtags.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I was thinking, yeah, if it was going to be a hashtag, I kind of was like, maybe like some of my favorite Survivor quotes. I'd like hashtag queen stays queen. Then one of my favorite quote, you know, from Suri is, my mother always told me, you know, you can't always beat him with these, you know, pointing to, you know, your arms, but you can always beat him with this, pointing to your brain. But then I thought, you can't always beat him with these.
How would you write that out? Like, parentheses, gestures to arm, gestures to head.
But also to have, like, you can't always beat him with these on my chest would be, like, a weird thing as well. So I don't know what message that would give. So I feel like there's a reason that's not a T-shirt already, and maybe too long. So, you know, I actually really like Leanne's Spice Girls T-shirt. I love the Spice Girls, and I feel like I'm very excited for that brand steal that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess could we do something like of what you want to be? Like if I did like hashtag I want to be in Weezer, or like hashtag Weird Al call me.
Well,
like,
want to be is a Spice Girls song. Not to go too Rob and Josh about this, Mike, but you know that, okay, it was a song.
How about hashtag I want to be with Gavin DeGraw based on his hit song of the mid-2000s, I Don't Want to Be.
Look, most of the clothes I wear are novelty shirts that are puns based on music and musical theater that I like. I've got a bunch of Hamilton shirts. I've got a lot of Taylor Swift merchandise. So I feel like I could probably, that's most of what I wear anyway. So I could probably wear that out on the island.
Well, maybe, yeah, I would probably wear a shirt that says like, wait for it, because it's a Hamilton quote, but also it's telling the viewers at home, like, look, I might not be doing anything now, but I'm sure eventually I'll do something that will screw up my game monumentally. So just wait for it.
I would absolutely love if someone was wearing a Hamilton shirt. And speaking of, in Meryl's video of getting to know the cast, she says she's a musical theater major. And she said that her, you know, her philosophy is going to be talk less, smile more, which is a very popular refrain from Hamilton. So I was like, ooh, I really hope that was on purpose. And if so, she's my favorite character on this cast.
And it reminds me of that scene in Hamilton where Hamilton's like, okay, we got, you know, John Lawrence, we got Marquis de Lafayette, Hercules Mulligan, you're with us too. And then behind the scenes, I really hate Hercules Mulligan. We need to get rid of him right now. I don't trust him. It's just us three to the end.
Who would win the Survivor that is Hamilton? Would it be Burr? Because everyone hated him. He'd be
Burr's game would not be respected. I think he'd make it to the end, but they'd be like, yeah, but you stabbed this guy in the back, like you were too patient with your game. Honestly, it would be someone like Thomas Jefferson. He's making a big spectacle at a tribal council. Everyone's falling in love with him. He's able to find himself in a position of power through a bunch of backhanded deals. I feel like the jury would fall in love with Thomas Jefferson. George Washington.
Rob got it for George Washington.
Oh, yeah. George Washington goes out in the fire making challenge and gives a huge farewell address to the people left in the game as he leaves. But I feel like Thomas Jefferson has it on lock.
Okay, we're really losing people with this, but I really enjoyed that. Randy Newpool says, please discuss the fact that the only tribe with a majority women didn't attempt to build a majority alliance based on gender. Which, look, the men did try in Lao Mei, and that lasted all of 1 second. And the women tribe did Ta'alo when they were the minority, and they also all hate Tanya, and Tanya already cut Meryl. So for a gender-based alliance, they're not doing too great.
Well, I think it's also because you put two people on there who have a history and wouldn't be amenable to working together. Maybe it could have happened if someone else was on there. Like if there was a completely different pageant person on there who Leanne or Nicole didn't have history with, it could have been a thing. I was very much thinking when we saw the three pageant people on one tribe that there was a chance we could have a pageant alliance. I just think it happened to be the fact that these two had history together that sort of sees past the fact that, oh yeah, there's four girls and three guys. Like we talked about, it's more so about who you get along with than maybe what they have in their pants. And it seems like we're really, to your point, seeing that across all tribes that, yes, there might be some deals that have been made initially based on gender, but almost all of those have fallen apart just based on how comfortable people feel with others.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was a bit weird because they're uneven tribes to begin with, but eventually all tribes have uneven numbers and uneven genders, and it's still not that often that we see like a ton of same-sex alliances. So it's basically, yeah, it's definitely who you're connecting with first, I think.
And ironically enough, now they have even numbers on the green tribe.
Yeah, exactly. Vanessa Yangturnia says, what does leadership smell like? Like Rocco, obviously, but what does Rocco smell like?
Cedar, probably. I wonder what, like, I don't know, javelin oil Is that a thing? Like hand lotion, maybe, because he constantly needs to have his mitts ready for the throw. I would assume some sort of body butter. Like that's a nice noxious cocktail.
I feel like, you know what, hopefully we're going to have Bryce on later in the season and we can ask him what Rocco smells like. And I feel like he's going to have some answers for us.
Yeah, because I think he's been sniffing around Rocco for the past few weeks, considering his social media follows.
Yeah, this is the kind of insight that we just don't have and that Bryce just does. Alexander Elias Cohen says, after last season, I think we can throw winner edits out the window with Survivor South Africa. Is this something we should even be looking at for the new one? The camera is finding Nicole everywhere, but I think it might be because she's a quasi-celebrity / naturally big target.
It's a good point that essentially Survivor South Africa sort of broke the winner edit with what happened with Tom. And the question is, are we going to have, as we talked about in the beginning of this podcast, a more conventional season this time around? Or are we going to keep going on this crazy cockamamie storytelling path where really anybody can win? It's really tough to say after only one episode. I'm still going to cling to sanity and say that maybe we can count some people out of contention, at least this episode. But if we... 18 weeks down the line. We were so wrong last time. I mean, I'm so happy to be wrong. And I'd be so happy to be wrong if 4 months from now we see a Tanya win and we're talking about Tanya as the winner. I would love nothing more than that. But I think at the moment, from either having no visibility or coming across too negatively, I feel like from a conventional perspective, as much as we might not want to do it, I feel like we could discount a few people personally.
Well, see, the thing with Survivor South Africa last season, it was like, did it break edgy because it's a different franchise or because Tom is Tom and there was no way for him to have a winner at it just based on who he is as a person? So I think it might have been a little bit of both. But I do think the way that Survivor South Africa were editing it was very much like it was A, entertaining, but B, like, what is relevant right now? You know, so something like where Tevin is a huge character in the pre-merge, they're going to show that even though he gets cut. And it makes it all that impactful because it's real. Like, he is such a big character. He is so important. And then when he gets cut, it's not like, well, they edited him like he was a minor pre-merge character, so who cares? You see what a big deal it was for such a big personality in those first couple of weeks to go home. So I do actually hope that they keep editing like that without as much of an agenda, show us the entertaining, very real and genuine content, and just kind of like let the season play out like that. I found that super satisfying, but I can't imagine anyone will be edited like Tom, no matter who the winner is. That's just Tom. You know, there is only one Tom.
And I think it's so great because I think we even talked about this last season, how I think it's the most representative of Survivor and that so much is day to day. And so much of that felt like episode to episode, where to your point, someone like Tevin, we say, oh yeah, he's got the edit. You even picked him as your winner last season because he had such a great game to start out with. And then it just completely fell apart in episode 7. And then we even saw someone like Werner do so well for so, so long. And we slowly had subtly sneaking up Tom's edit at the end where, yes, he was boorish and he was rubbing people the wrong way, but he just made a couple of key decisions at the end that ended up surprisingly giving him the win. So we have a lot of game in front of us where even someone like Nicole, maybe to David's point or to the question asker's point, a reason why we're seeing so much of her is maybe she goes out a few episodes from now. And the lesson is, well, she should have taken that opportunity to keep Leanne around because now she got screwed over by these other people. Who's to say? It's tough to determine at this moment. I guess if I could sort of plant my flag somewhere, I would say that I'm not feeling too great about Maba or Dorau, considering we haven't seen too much of them in the premiere. They could become huge characters later, like PK did. He was memorably not really in the premiere of Survivor South Africa, but I don't know if they can exactly win. And similarly, I'm hoping Tanya could go far. I'm not entirely sure if her chance is just based on her game position. But honestly, everyone else, I feel like, has at least a shot given where they sit in the game and on the show.
Well, we did get a question from Steve on Twitter. You know, considering you weren't in the preview podcast, I put my flag saying that I thought Jeffrey would be the winner. And I actually feel pretty good about that pick. Mike, do you have a winner pick after the first episode? Of course, it would have an asterisk next to it, much like a recent US Survivor win. But yeah, if you have one now, we will half count that.
Absolutely. Put an asterisk, an ampersand, a dollar sign, put whatever you want next to there. I don't really... Predicting a winner is predicting a winner. So, you know what? Let me go with the numbers. Let me say Nathan right now.
Yeah, Nathan looks really good.
Yeah, I think he has a really good head on his shoulders. You know, he talked about in his preseason how he really has struck this great balance of being perceived as the meathead, but actually having this law degree in the back of his head, where, as we saw with the castaway in this past US Survivor, he's able to sort of run the numbers and think methodically, if not logically. And so I think based on his position and just the tool set that he has, he's in a really good position now. Watch it get voted off in like episode 6, and it just gets all shot to sunshine.
Well, he does like have an injury at the moment, but I still think that's a really good pick.
But it could be the Tyson thing as well, where he's like, he's totally mitigated his threat level too. I mean, he didn't necessarily need to, considering that he has Rob standing next to him. He's like a hulking behemoth. I think anyone would get rid of Rob over him if they're picking off threats, but he might have just lessened his threat level a bit as well, maybe been able to focus more on his social and personal skills just due to the fact that he can't move around as much.
I would love for Rob to just be carrying him around the entire season. Like, I wanted the end for Rob to be carrying Nathan into final tribal council as the two of them sit there as the final two, not just because it'll mean Rob's on my screen for 18 episodes, but just like, it's so funny to me, like, because Nathan is like a big muscular guy, and next to Rob, he just looks like a tiny child, just like in Rob's arms, and I just, it's so funny to me.
I want Rob to be the Hodor of this season. Let's make it happen.
All right. Well, last question that I have is Felipe Shimon, who says, would the Island of Secrets have been better with totems of Verna and Palessa's heads, or even Stacey Lee and Ace? Who are the two from Survivor South Africa that should have giant shrines erected of them at the Island of Secrets?
Well, it depends on like who has the most notable features. You know, because that's the thing about Rom and Sandra is that, say what you want to, quibble if you want to about the actual construction of the statues, but those are images that you look at and you automatically say, okay, I know who that's supposed to be.
I don't think it looks like Rob, to be honest. I don't actually think that looks like
I think it depends on, like, I think the problem is that there was no little bee hat.
Maybe it doesn't have this giant bee hat.
I think the Red Sox might have had a problem with it, and maybe the Patriots as well, if they went with this Marquesas version. I mean, I will say, being there in person, maybe it's a bit easier to take in person.
Oh my god,
you
I can't
to.
Believe you saw. I just am realizing that you saw those in person. Do you have a photo with the totems?
Oh yeah.
Oh my god,
we'll talk about it at the end. It'll come in the fall. But yeah, I they were absolutely insane. I cackled wildly in seeing them because they are so incredibly insane. I absolutely love them. But I guess to answer the question, I don't know. I kind of feel like you have to put Tom's head on there. Yeah. I know that he's not the beacon of strategy, but I mean, he was the biggest character there. Honestly, I would say Tom and Werner, if we're not evening up the genders, if we are, Tom and Palessa, I feel like would just be a great sort of representation of what South Africa was in terms of just how crazy the events were.
Yeah, I was going to say Tom and Jean, but yeah, Tom and Palessa, I famously said I'm going to name two cats after over in, you know, my life in the future. So yeah, imagine if it was Tom and Palessa and they did have to live there giving people advice. I would just want to see them on the island.
They have to share the bed like Palessa did when she took Tom on the reward. Like, I would have loved this because that would have been a case where like one of them would probably have to be in like evacuated, or like they would have I Love Lucy style like divided up the camp in half, just because they are not surviving 39 days out there with just the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said, you could pretty much put any person on the cast from last season, make just like 18/17 totem poles for the cast. I'm not gonna do the Stacey Lee stuff of the season, okay? I think I've done it to death.
How do you think Martinez would handle it, considering that I believe one of the commandments is thou shalt not worship false idols?
Oh my god, can I have a giant Martinez statue in my home, is what I want.
Well, you would, but then you'd quit building it halfway through.
Yeah, I would just, yeah, I feel like every one of those cast members really just deeply deserves a massive monument erected for them. But anyway, we've come to the end of this.
Well, let's talk to this one town. You know what? Cashing on that favor from 1976. Put all your tax resources together. We're building statues of the entirety of the Survivor South Africa Philippines cast. Get on it.
Papier-mâché statues. She already used her favor in voting on that Biostrath poll.
That's true. So now she needs to have her dad, I don't know, burn the IRS to the ground in South Africa, and so he could really get a bunch. He needs 17 favors to cash in right now.
Okay, well, Mike, what is the hashtag of this madness? I've got a couple of options. Hashtag Tanya Alo, which I think with the apostrophe might not work. Hashtag.
Yeah, it also feels like we're referring to as like Tanya Aloe Vera, like she's a nice soothe on their burns, which she's quite the opposite. She is the sun that is burning her game and her tribe right now.
Yeah, also really hard to spell. Hashtag Spice Girl Survivor, hashtag Chekhov's Key, and hashtag Twitter Tombstone.
It's got to be hashtag Twitter's Tombstone.
Which will be on my tombstone, ironically.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about the metrics behind it. Look, the way that technology is going in our Black Mirror-like society, I honestly would not be surprised if we had social media take over eulogies or tombstones. So I feel like we're just ahead of the trend here. Yeah. You know, we're trying to both create and perpetuate this trend, much like you did with the chizzy.
Yeah, you can have that on my tombstone right next to the giant monument of my head that I expect now. Now that I've seen what people are capable of, I will be definitely requiring that. Well, Mike, you alluded to it earlier. So, you know, besides being a father, please tell everyone what else you have going on, what podcast you're doing, and what coverage people can check out from you.
So as we mentioned, Survivor US recently wrapped up. I'm going to be talking through the very controversial, but very, very discussion-worthy ending of Survivor Edge of Extinction on the RHAP B&B with Liana Boris, who ended up filling in for me on the preview for this season. We're going to have on Big Brother legend Eric Stein to talk through just all the chaos. It still feels like a dream, what happened on Wednesday, and I don't know if it's a good dream or a bad dream.
It's not good, right?
But it's a Survivor nightmare, to quote a Survivor Kageyan contestant. So we'll break that all down. But I also put out a bit of a preview for Survivor 39. I happened to have the privilege of going out on set for Survivor Island of the Idols. I did get to go to the titular Island of the Idols and talk with Rob and Sandra. It was just an incredible experience. I cannot wait to talk about it more as the season approaches in the fall. For now, I put up a couple of pieces. I have something up on parade.com that explains the twist a bit more. Josh Wiggler and I talked with Robin Sandra for The Hollywood Reporter. I also have an exit interview with the Survivor 38 winner, too. I'm covering The Amazing Race, speaking of Survivor and crossovers, which is doing a big reality show season with Rob Cesarino, who will be our guest in a couple weeks, and Jessica Leese. I'm covering the end of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's this weird thing where a lot of shows are winding down, but a lot are starting up at the same time. So it just feels like I'm changing gear in this podcasting car, but I am so, so excited to get into this more with you, Shannon, as the weeks go by and as Tanya slowly ascends her way to the top and ends up completely surprising us all.
Yeah, well, I mean, people have said they've gone back and listened to our podcast in hindsight and how many times we said Tom could never win, so we know nothing. So, you know, we're just here to kind of talk about it and be wrong. But yeah, no, follow Mike at A Mike Bloom Type. You follow me at Shannon Gates. I have feelings about the Edge of Extinction finale that I've been rage tweeting for 2 straight days. Haven't slept really. And I'll be posting the podcast and question threads for the podcast as well, and just, you know, some general thoughts. You can always DM me for links that I have, and also for season 6 if you never got to it, like, why didn't you? Please subscribe as well to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed and the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed so you don't miss a podcast. And as I said at the top of the show, we should have Rob Cesternino on, the great leader of everything we're doing here. He's going to be on to talk about it next week. So it's going to be a very, very fun season. And I'm just so excited, Mike, to talk about it with you till September 12th.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I mean, Survivor South Africa was one of the highlights of my year last year, just getting to break it all down with you. Hopefully our avatars, Jacques and Ting Ting, will be able to talk about them and track them each week as well. But between the chizzies, the questions, the biostrat, it's a great time to be a Survivor SA fan. So I cannot wait to row forward with you on this big old podcast boat.
Yeah, and I also want to say that, you know, if you're always searching for links and that is an issue for you, a really good way to get very easy links with absolutely no effort is to be a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. That's just one of so many perks. If you've been thinking about it, listening for a while, this is, I think, a really good incentive. And anyway, it's so fun. Such a good community talking about Survivor South Africa and pretty much all things reality TV and then some. So yeah, that might be a really good incentive. But otherwise, please hashtag Twitter Tombstone and sorry, Mom, about that hashtag. And we will be here next week with Rob to talk about episode 2 of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. Thanks. Bye.